Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, a lot of things have happened, just in the last little bit. For one, something kind of bizarre, actually. This is funny. I recently did an upgrade with Blog Talk Radio, and because we need more storage for all the episodes that we have now. And I didn't notice this until just last night, because I've been planning to go to 3 hours, you know, in January. And I thought, well, this would be kind of cool. Let's do that. We'll extend up to 3 hours, and let's see what we can accomplish here. And then I looked at the last night, and I said, oh, I can do 3 hours now. I don't need a new plan. So we're going to be – so I'm just going to extend it today. So if Jonathan and Claire Lopez, Jonathan mostly Claire Lopez, want to stick around for a while, I don't have to shut off the show. But it's been getting so crowded lately, and I want to Gene right now. And Gina, producer here, who's going to be a whole lot busier, you know, in the very near future. So, Gene, I don't know if you can stick around today, but I'm gonna hang out till 10 o'clock if we still have callers. If not, because people aren't used to it, you know, I'll just shut things down. But we're going to 3 immediately. I'm going to start today because why not? I'm so sick of cutting off the show, you know, when I still have people that want to talk. It's been driving me crazy. What do you think? Think we can use the extra time or what?
I think it'll be good. I think it'll help people just continue to make them more aware what's going on and let them, you know, tell us what they're finding out as well to help us be more informed. So,
yeah.
And I think the dialogue, the discussion is always good. Yeah. So I think it's very, very good. And especially considering tomorrow is going to be exciting with Arizona coming out with the election stuff. So, and then after who knows?
This is Arizona Audit Eve. This is Arizona Audit Eve. I'm so excited. So I made a present for you. You now have a hotel bell. So a nice little reminder. That's our room service bell. So when you want to, you know, kind of introduce yourself, or if I'm talking a bit too much, or you want to kind of, you know, work yourself on the conversation, feel free to do so. And you can do it again. You can do it a second time. And if that doesn't work, of course, we have Old Faithful, the Chinese gong. Who says we don't have fun here? All right, we have a guest. Jane Adams is going to join us here. Let me make her line live because there's an event that's going on. I'm not really too sure exactly all the details because if you look at the Facebook post, it's a little bit lacking. This is why I wanted to have her on to talk about this. It's called the Peaceful Freedom Rally United at the Capitol. And I think this is a multi-state event. I think there's a lot of different things going on. So, Jane, welcome to Action Radio, and let's start talking about this rally of yours. What, how, give me some details. How did it come about? What are you trying to accomplish? Well, let's start with where, this is what happens this morning, right? Let's start with where and when. Where is it going to be? Who is it going to be? And then we'll start talking details. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. So the rally is
going
to be in Tallahassee, Florida at the State Capitol building. The reason for it is to fight for medical freedom. It started out as a group of healthcare workers from the Pensacola area. I'm a representative of that group from one of the very major hospitals in Pensacola. Mm-hmm. It started out with just us, but as we reached out to other healthcare workers across the nation that also work for this healthcare company, but others as well, we decided to aim to have rallies at all of the state capitals across the nation. So we didn't quite reach every state, but we have it in Florida, Alabama, and then some out west towards California and in that area. But it's just going to be a peaceful protest. We're going to hold signs. We're going to hand out flyers and really just make our voice known to the community and to the representatives inside of the state capitol building.
Yeah. What do you want them to do?
To help. Our objective is to fight against the mandate or to at least modify it to something that is more reasonable, a reasonable compromise. So we understand that private companies can write their own policies, and we don't want that freedom to be taken away. we would just like a reasonable compromise. So an example of this would be for associates to be able to prove natural antibodies, natural immunity, mm-hmm. in order to okay. be exempt from the mandate. many of these companies that are mandating the vaccine, they've offered medical or religious exemptions,
mm-hmm.
or they say that they are offering those, but they are now denying those literally by the thousands. The company that I work for has over 100,000 employees, and the group that I'm connected with, we have 11,000 signatures on our petition mm-hmm. and about 1,500 members in our local support group just for the Pensacola area, and I have not heard of one person's exemption that has been approved. So that's really the specific issue that we're fighting for, is for people that apply for religious exemption. We should not have to justify what our religion is, and that cannot be denied. If we lose freedom of religion in this country, then we lose our country itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely with you on this 100%, because I've been at protests, you know, for various folks. I've been involved with different groups. I'm trying to help folks out. I've tried to get lawyers in. I published things on my Facebook page. Chris Ann Hall, as constitutional attorney, has forms to fight this. There's another one, the Liberty, I forgot what it is. Yeah, Liberty Council, exactly. So I can talk to you off the air about specific places to go. But it looks like you're in the right track. I want to get involved with your particular group too, if I'm not already and don't know it. We're being purposely evasive here because jobs are at stake, and so mm-hmm. people have to be very careful when they come on the show, especially as we're growing a whole lot, which is great. But I want to make sure that we protect the people, the sources here, because what's going on in this country is very strange. You've got a situation where what used to be an automatic, a religious exemption is not treated, it's not valued anymore, because I don't think churches are valued anymore, because mm-hmm. ever since the churches wimped out with the lockdowns, and this is the fault of the churches too. So I lay this, right at their feet. They are the ones who created the situation by allowing themselves to be locked down, by complying with a government mandate that was illegal. You can't lock down mm-hmm. churches. Our Constitution, as Pianchi, one of our callers, often says, Constitution doesn't have an on and off switch. However great the crisis, however, if we had a nuclear war, a pandemic, and a civil war all at the same time, you still have your constitutional rights. It's the time when the government is trying to take them away, whether they call it public health or whether they call it, this vaccine mandate for our safety. It doesn't matter what they call it. But when the government is trying to take away your rights is when you need the Constitution the most. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
It's not for things are going well. It's for when things are going badly, like now. So I admire what you're doing.
That is so true. And,
yeah. Go ahead.
And, being a healthcare worker and working for these major corporations that have policies, mm-hmm. that does not mean that we lose our constitutional rights. They're putting their own internal policies above the Constitution. And that's what we're fighting for, is just, our basic freedom to determine what goes inside of our body.
Yeah. Hey, whatever happened to my body, my choice? That's a popular thing on the left,
right.
With the Bush, and always screaming about it when we're talking about, we'll have the discussion another time, but I've always looked at an abortion as like, my body and my choice over three people, the mother,
yeah.
the father, and the child. So it's like, well, it's not just your body and it's not just your choice, so it's a very interesting argument the irony of saying that, in this situation where the government's saying, well, it's not your body and it's not your choice, and the corporations. Well, let's get right down to the nitty gritty here. Why do you think the corporations, especially healthcare companies who have experts in working in these healthcare, in hospitals and doctor's offices, in medical, clinics and all kinds of things, medical people in a huge percentage do not want to be vaccinated. Okay, that alone to me is a huge red flag.
Mm-hmm.
So for management to try and force this on you, force on healthcare workers a mandate that you specifically do not want, there's got to be some motivation for them doing this. Is it money? Is it control? Is the government telling them to do it? What do you think is behind all this, especially in the healthcare field?
I would encourage all of your listeners to look at the CMS guidelines for reimbursement for Medicaid and Medicare.
CMS
is it's the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services.
Okay.
So they are basically it's a type of governing body over Medicaid and Medicare. which is okay. one of the major, you know, forms of income for many hospitals is Medicaid. So I would encourage your listeners to look at their guidelines regarding hospital employee vaccination rates. And that might
what are the rates? Do you
clue
know?
You into.
Do you know the rates?
Oh, I don't know. Of vaccinated employees?
Yeah, in hospitals. I'm just curious.
So
you don't have to know. I mean,
last,
I ask impossible questions all the time. So
I don't
worry about what you
They actually sent out. Yeah, they actually sent out this information to all employees. As of July 23rd, the Gulf Coast area had 46% of its employees vaccinated within this hospital.
Okay, those are the ones that wanted to, right? Was there coercion involved there? Or those,
yes.
That was just voluntary?
Oh.
Or was that coerced?
That's both. So 46% of in our area was fully vaccinated.
Okay.
So some, I'm sure a large portion of those, you know, were voluntary. Some of them just felt like they were forced to get it. I think we're a little bit higher than that now. But even if it's, you know, just above 50%, then that is far below what the hospitals are portraying their numbers to be. They desperately want, you know, the community and the media to think that all of their nurses and physicians and administrators want this vaccine. And so they continually put out, you know, stories and all the propaganda that makes it look like we are all in this together, when the complete opposite is the truth.
Well, that's part
of
the propaganda. That's part of the propaganda.
Right.
That's why you have polls that supported Biden when everybody knew, you know, he had 8 people to rally and Trump had 50,000 with 20,000 more waiting to get in. You know, I mean,
right.
You know, you look at this and most people are fairly intelligent. Okay. So I don't dispute the intelligence of the average American. I dispute the information that's available to them. And we have this discussion a lot of times on Tuesday. You should definitely come back and join our Tuesday discussion group, because we have some real, you know, opposition going on, you know, in terms of what people know, what people think, but a lot of it has to do with the information that they get. And if you get the information that the vaccine is the only way to safety, that the only way back to being normal is through the vaccine, if you want basically, you know, buy your constitutional rights back, which is a whole bogus theory in itself, the way to do it is the vaccine. And this is from a country that has made the cures illegal. Okay, so just to give you a little more detail, because we really haven't had, you know, a huge amount of discussion, but I was the one that broke the story. I think before anybody else in the country, that this is back on March 2nd of 2020. This is like 13 days before 15 days to slow the spread, the very first action that Trump took when he declared an emergency. We broke the chloroquine kills COVID. Okay, we speak very openly on the show, so don't be afraid to just say what you want. But I broke that story. I stood by it. I stand by it today. Dr. Dieter Raoult in Marseille, or as they used to call him, Dieter Raoult in Marseille, broke the story. Okay, and then there are other stories too. And then I learned about Dr. Zelenko, who wrote President Trump, the lawful, the real president. All right, so now we're friends. I mean, I'm in contact with him, you know, fairly frequently, and you know, can get him on the show here periodically, because he's a busy guy. He does like world media now; it's amazing. But just to be able to talk to some of these people, Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, who says don't take the vaccine under any circumstances.
Yeah.
It's a spike protein, you know, infusion. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, I ramble.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say that's, you know, the whole point of informed consent. When we advocate for our patients, no matter if it's a major surgery or a vaccine or any procedure that has risk, which vaccines do, part of informed consent is knowing the alternative options. So exactly like you're saying, there's alternatives. So I think that is something that we have to normalize in our country and in the media. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, just because you're choosing not to take the vaccine, that doesn't mean that you're not taking measures to protect yourself and the people around you. There are so many other things that I do personally on a daily basis to protect myself and protect my patients that I work with. So I think there's a big misunderstanding for if people don't, especially healthcare workers, if they choose not to take the vaccine, that it's irresponsible and that they're contributing to the spread of the virus, but that's just not true. You know, there's so many other things that we can do to protect each other and that have zero risk.
Well, the vaccinated are the ones who are spreading it. As I understand, antibody-dependent enhancement. We get technical on the show, too. So, like I say, I'm
well,
send you back regularly.
Yeah,
you know,
so I look at that the circumstance as, you know, if you mm-hmm. go to the beach with a group of friends or your family, right. and you and your family choose to wear sunscreen, but the people that you go with choose not to wear sunscreen, that doesn't affect how your likelihood of getting sunburned. If you're wearing mm-hmm. your sunscreen and it's safe and effective, then you should be good. So why are you worried about other people, their sunscreen? It's the, to me, it's the same thing. So this whole
well,
question
the,
by the hospital...
Now you get into the psychology of this, though. So the problem is that wearing sunscreen is accepted, okay? Whereas the mandatory vaccine, the fact that it's mandatory is coerced. There's an extortion going on here because you don't whether you wear sunscreen or not does not affect your constitutional rights, okay? Whereas the vaccine mandate does. And so there's a very strange psychology. There's us and them. You know, it's like when people used to ask me way back in the beginning of this, because I went without a mask all the time because that was stupid. You know, I've read from a paper, which has since been retracted, but the information is still good, that a virus is 1,000 times smaller than the space in a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So what the hell do you expect them to do, right? So masks are useless. Yeah. Masks are a conforming device. It's a controlling device. And people come to me and say, where's your mask? I said, what mask? I don't have one. And who the hell are you anyway? Shut the hell up. You know, I mean, I get people in the face about this. I said, why are you even telling me this? Who are you? You know, what is your problem? But it's fear. They're so afraid they become angry. They express their fear and anger. And so this collective fear that's been brought about.
Signaling.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just saying it's part of the virtue signaling. And that's a whole, you mentioned, you know, control.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other aspect of this mandate, mm-hmm. too, is the harassment and the discrimination inside of hospitals right now is so toxic, and they're losing staff daily when there's already a staffing shortage. So when they put out the numbers, when you see numbers talking about people in hospital beds and how they're overbooked in hospitals, that's not due to patients, that's the staffing shortage that we are already experiencing. And now people are quitting and being fired over this mandate.
So why are they so stupid as to do this? Because I heard from David Jones yesterday. I was reporting on Santa Rosa Hospital here in Santa Rosa County. And they are firing people. They are, and then they're paying, I think, $1,200 extra per shift, which means they're putting a whole lot of money into getting rid of people and replacing them and overbooking there's just, like I say, too few medical staff, too many patients. The ratio is the problem, is exactly as you're saying. Why would they do this? It makes, first of all, no business sense. It's stupid, but there's got to be, like I said, the motivation has to be behind it. They have to be either making more money by mm-hmm. doing the mandates, or they're just, you know, part of this groupthink obsession. They're all jumping off the cliff together and you know, let's all hold hands as we go. What do you think?
I think it's both. I think exactly like you said, you have, you know, hospitals are businesses, and if they're able to pay travel nurses and replacement, you know, all these new recruits bonus, they have mm-hmm. to get that money from somewhere. And again, I would look at the CMS reimbursement guidelines to see where that money comes from.
Yeah, if you're interested, and like I say, we only have about another, you know, 12 minutes today, 11 minutes right now, because we're going to have Jonathan Mosley. We'll talk legal stuff.
That's okay. I actually have to go back to work anyway.
Okay. Well, then here's what I'd like to do. I want to talk to you about doing, you know, a further report on the CMS guidelines. We're going to move to 6 o'clock in January, so if you need to come on earlier. But if you get a chance between now and then, I want to talk about that, because the beauty of this show, what we do that no one else has ever done, is we actually write citizen legislation. I've got a bill that changes the law, you know, so that vaccine manufacturers have full product liability. Those are actually rather easy. You look in the law where it says they shall not have liability, and you take out the word not. Okay, so we've got that. We've got laws on Section 230 changing that. So there's a bunch of things. All right, if you have to go, I want to talk to you more, because we're only just getting started here. If you can give the place, the time, any Facebook or media or any websites or any connection to the peaceful demonstration, it's Friday, right? 3 o'clock, if I remember.
Yep, tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock Tallahassee time. At the Florida State Capitol building, and I will send you the link to the event page that you can share with listeners.
That sounds good.
Or they can email me. If listeners want to contact me directly for more information, they can email me, Jane Adams with 2 D's, JaneAdams 825@gmail.com.
I'm going to put put that down here myself at gmail.com. Yeah. Okay. Jane, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. I wish I had more time because I want to let Jane ask you some questions too, Jane, our producer, because she's a healthcare person also. So you have to come back. I mean, you just have to. We got too much to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would love to.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow. Jane, what do you think?
You know, the thing is, I think it all goes back to follow the money. I was listening to a podcast, well, not a podcast, but a video of a mother. Oh, she was wonderful, talking to a school board. And they, I can't even remember, it's an astronomical amount of money they were given for following the mask mandates and different things. So it's not as though they're doing it for the best of anybody's interest. They're just following the money. So you got to wonder how much money the federal government is doing or what they're doing. Or entities to get hospitals, organizations, whatever, to comply with the mandate or the, you know, the shot, and how many people are going for it. I know my niece last night said she broke down and got her first one yesterday because she didn't want to lose her job. And it's like, how sad is that? She's in her early 20s. And, yeah, to be put in that position is horrible. And, you know, the thing is, we're just being told a whole big bunch of lies and no one's being held accountable. You know, people are still, how come after the herd immunity or supposedly the 14-day that turned out to be 18 months of lockdown, whatever, in certain places, why
15
now
days
is
to maintain
COVID
the spread
still rising? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they have a clue.
That's a great question. You know, if it was 15 days to slow the spread, obviously that was never the idea. You know, the spread would have been gone, you know, by July 15th. We've tracked the CDC charts. I've still got them. I've still got the death count, you know, going sharply up from the end of January through March and to April 15th, tax day. And then at April 15th, it reverses and the trend goes sharply down, about a 45-degree angle up, about a 45-degree angle down. And this is the trajectory of most viruses. So by July 4th, you know, what I call COVID Independence Day 2020, not this year, but July 4th, 2020, this thing was done, you know, and then the lie started. And then the case count was fabricated with the PCR test that doesn't work. And then everything was linked to, you know, anything that was remotely connected to a COVID death. In other words, there was a recent case of someone, a family that a husband and wife, that were murdered, all right? But they had a positive test a month ago, so they listed it as a COVID death. So the lies that began. And the lies, you know, they still say we're in the middle of a pandemic. Well, how can you be in the middle of a pandemic that ended July 4th, you know, over a year ago? You know, so this is all propaganda. This is all about vaccines. This is all about selling the vaccine and making billions of dollars for government and big pharma. They're both in this together. It's a government pharmaceutical industrial marketing campaign. And the industry is us. You know, we are the product. And the product is a spike protein that creates the need for more vaccines. It's a self-perpetuating marketing device because as you get infused with spike proteins, the vaccinated are shedding those infected spike proteins amongst everybody else. That's why I take now quercetin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, you know, and zinc. And I didn't do that before because I didn't worry about COVID. I was never worried about COVID. First of all, I had it back in January. Pianki's on the line now. He remembers. He remembers when my voice sounded like crap, you know, in January of 2020. So I never worry about COVID, you know, but I do worry about the vaccinated. So that's why I'm taking the stuff now, because they're everywhere. The spreaders of the disease to maintain the marketing are everywhere. And that's the problem.
Right.
And they don't even know it. You've got a whole nation of people that think they're doing the right thing to buy back their constitutional rights, which you don't have to do, obviously, you know, to make the world safe, make the world normal, and carry on. And they think this is their way to salvation. You know, it's like a religious cult. You know, take the vaccine and you will be saved. You know, and it's crazy. But that's what's going on. And so I never, you know, my biggest fear right now, and it's not really that big a fear, but it's still there. Obviously, I'm taking, you know, the immune boosters. Are they vaccinated? Because I'm around those people all the time. We all are.
Right, right. Well,
yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And then in the past few weeks, I think I've now been know of six people that got it. And now, you know, I'd say probably, what I know is probably about half has the vaccine, half didn't. But it's like, that's more people I knew at one time than the last year and a half put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah. You know, the question goes, do you know anybody, and I don't know. If this involves a personal tragedy, you don't have to go into it, but I'm just saying, do you know anybody that died of COVID who got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, you know, zinc, azithromycin? Do you know anybody that got the treatments we know work who died of COVID? I mean, it happens because, you know, no, stuff happens.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I think everybody I know that died of it never got those treatments. No.
Yeah. And you're in healthcare, you would know.
We're going to get to that. It would have been a cheap trial, you know, or something, mm-hmm. you know, because what did they say? I think it's like $12 a pill or something versus.
No, it's less than that.
Some of the
it's $20. No, it's $20 for a week. So it's like, what's 20 divided by 5?
Well,
Four bucks a pill.
Yeah.
It's like nothing.
Okay.
You know, or even less than that because, you know, 7 days. Yeah, it's $20 for a week of treatment. That's to say you can cure COVID for 25%, okay? You get $20 worth of hydroxychloroquine, and you get another few dollars worth of, you know, a week's worth of vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc. And you can get zinc in pumpkin seeds. You know, you can get zinc in a lot of places. I have my zinc elderberry lozenges. You know, I have it now in a zinc. It's called Zycam. And it has, I think, 11 milligrams of zinc. Dr. Slanko recommends 22, but that's more of the treatment. Anyway, let's get Pianki in line. We've got about 5 minutes before Jonathan gets in. I didn't even touch my topic of the day yet, but we'll get to that too. Pianki, welcome to the discussion.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be in such grateful company, Gene and you yourself.
Oh, well. Reverend Pianki, thank you, sir.
Welcome.
Yes.
You got Father Gene and Pastor Greg.
You know,
Florida's
new Surgeon General, Joseph Laudapo,
uh-huh.
who has tons and tons and tons of accreditations and qualifications, he opposes mandates.
Could you say that again?
He opposes vaccine mandates.
Oh, it's better than that. Oh, listen, let me say what he just did yesterday. Okay, we got stuff all over on my Facebook page on this. He's gotten rid of the quarantine of asymptomatic students. Schools can't do that anymore. They can't send kids home, you know, just because they think they might have COVID, maybe, you know, or just because they were exposed to a positive person. And the positive people are all false. It's like 98% false positives anyway. I don't know what the rate. What's the rate of false positives in the PCR test, Gene? I know it's huge.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what it is?
Figured out.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Anyway. All right. Oh, something I got to tell you folks about Facebook. You know, when you go to your Facebook page, they don't post all of your posts. You have to refresh the screen. They take out the ones they don't like. You know, you can see it pretty easily how they do that. But I post. Let me see. Where's the school thing? South has as well. Let me see if I can pull this up here because it's really kind of cool. And some of our local folks are getting – here we go. Santa Rosa District Schools, South Santa Rosa News says, breaking – here we go. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a bit long. No more required quarantines. Santa Rosa School District changes quarantines after new Florida Surgeon General issues rules. That's Dr. Laudapo or Lapado. I forget what it is. Anyway, it's one of those two. Santa Rosa School Superintendent Karen Barber – sorry, I had to do that. Karen Barber – this afternoon participated in a Zoom meeting with school and district administrators following yesterday's appointment of new Florida Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph, here we go, Laudapo, who today said asymptomatic students may attend school without restriction after being exposed to COVID-19. Subsequently, the district has updated its quarantine policy. What do you think of that, Reverend Pianki?
That's great. And you know, you got the news media is really tearing into this. They want to say something.
That's
because
they're racist.
They won't. And you know why? Because he's a black individual.
Mm-hmm.
So
individual is a key word. That's the key word. He's a black individual. He's not in the group.
Absolutely.
There's nothing more dangerous to Marxists these days than black conservatives who are individuals. Oh, yeah. It's a huge threat. This is why we need more black, you know, conservatives.
And he represents
at every level.
Science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor.
Real science.
He represents science. Uh-huh. So you're pulling the school out from under the fear tactics that we have witnessed over the last year.
Yeah.
And it's just great. I'm anxious to see how this goes.
Well, this is fabulous. In fact, I've already called his office just to let you know. You know, I want to get him on the show. And what I want to encourage, in fact, I put this on my Facebook page too, so I'll announce it on the show too. Please, it's easy to find. Just look up Florida Surgeon General. It'll take you right to it. You can call his office directly. And my message was very simple. You know, please change the rules so that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine can be used as cures in Florida. Very simple message. So everybody should call. You want to do something? Here's a chance to do something. Because this guy, I think, might go for it. So hopefully, I'd love to get him on the show. And I'd love to, in fact, I'd love to get the governor and him on the show, but, you know, we'll work our way up there. But definitely this guy is the coolest doc, you know, in the country right now. And so he's right up there with Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Phil Emanuel, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Scott Atlas, who was on a Zoom thing yesterday, which I published. It's just a lot of very interesting things happened to very good doctors. Notice that most of them are not in government. But here's a guy who's in government who is good, but he's also on the faculty now, Florida, I think, University of Florida. You know, he's got a ton of – he's a hell of a lot more qualified than Dr. Fascist, who has a basic medical degree, who isn't even a virologist. Dr. Fascist has nothing beyond the most basic medical degree because he's a bureaucrat, paper-pushing, genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher. Whoa. You like the way I just threw that one out there? Jackie?
That's a tongue twister.
Well, it's not as bad as Pianchi's picture-perfect face-saving shaving cream. I'll explain that later.
That is a tongue twister.
What's that?
I say that is a tongue twister.
Yeah, it took me 20 minutes to learn how to say it. For folks that don't know, during the lockdown, I got very creative, and I did a bunch of very political pieces, which I play periodically just for my own amusement and yours too. I need to make more. Because those are fun, but it was a weird time when everything was going wrong in the country and they were doing all the wrong things, just much like now. Well, in fact, I'm just waiting for, I expect Jonathan will be joining us here any minute now, but the title of the show, President Nobody and the Great American Replacement. Okay. This is going to be, I think, a long series of discussions, but I'm starting to call Biden President Nobody. You can't impeach President Nobody because nobody's there. We don't have a government because nobody's there. You know, yeah, there's a body walking around, but basically it's President Nobody. And so I can be just as dehumanizing. I can be just as derogatory. I can be just as insulting, just as ridiculing, and I can be just as controlling in my language as the left and the Marxists who have perfected this. Hey, I learned from them, okay? So I want everybody to start calling him President Nobody, okay? You start doing that. The best way to handle the left is to ridicule them, you know, insult them, use sarcasm, use satire, use anything you can to upset and destabilize and do things with them. But we got a great American replacement. I want to get into this now before Jonathan gets here. I'm sure we'll pick it up later. But I wrote some notes down this morning and I put them on my Facebook page. Yeah, go ahead, Jean.
I need my bell. I just want to tell you what I found, and I was going to say with the doctor there. What's important about him? He has more than a doctor degree, but also. He was trained from Harvard, and that must just drive those guys nuts because he doesn't think like they think.
Wait a minute. We've got a black, conservative, independent, immigrant doctor who was trained at Harvard?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Now it says here, the one article I found, it says the research has found that people without COVID-19 symptoms correctly tested positive in 58.1% of the rapid cases.
That's
the 95% confidence intervals were 40.2 to 74.1.
Yeah, that seems low.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like 95% are false positives because they magnify the results or they cycle it through. You can explain how the process works. But they recycle and they keep amplifying the sample to go for that. You know, I mean, you can find any virus if you're looking for it. If you recycle something 40 times where the recommended anything over 30 gives you bad results and they recommend doing it, I guess, 25 times amplification at the absolute most, and they're doing 40. They're doing that because they want false positives. Monopoly. That's part of the coup. It's part of the marketing.
And then it says, right. And then it says here, rapid tests more accurately provide a positive COVID-19 result when it's administered during the first week of symptoms. And the researchers found that the rapid test correctly identified COVID-19 in an average of 78.3% of the cases during the first week. Mm-hmm. And in the second week, it drops down to 51%.
Mm.
So it's like I'm getting them done like 4 to 5 times a week. And obviously it's like, why are they doing it so often when it's not accurate anyway?
Wait a minute, you're being tested 4 to 5 times a week for COVID?
Yes.
That's insane.
How did they test you?
Yes.
Is it a PCR test?
Because I go to different places. So, yes, one place you have to test one day, then you go to the next place. Oh, you haven't been tested here this week yet. You have to be tested. Some days I get the rapid and the one they have to send out. Yeah, it's insane.
So they're sending out a test.
Put the swab in your nose.
Go ahead. Pianchi.
They put the swab in your nose?
Yes.
Oh, how'd you know?
Let me tell you something. You ever read the can of spray Listerine? I mean Lysol, not Listerine, Lysol.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me that it's in there.
It peels from COVID. So sometimes I'll spray that and just take a big sniff.
Actually, you know what though? I wouldn't recommend that. There's a better way. Get Zicam zinc. Okay, because what Zicam does, these are dissolvable lozenges, and the reason they're dissolvable as opposed to swallowing whole is because as they are dissolving, they are filling your nose and mouth and, you know, that whole, you know, cavity of breathing air in with the zinc coating. Okay, that zinc coating is going to be a hell of a lot better for you than sniffing that Lysol. Don't Peggy, don't do that. No, please get some zinc.
Another thing too, Greg.
Yeah. Okay.
Now what we need to pay attention. Watch his peers.
So, quick point.
Real quick. Watch his peers, Mr. Lopato's peers. They're going to find someone in his profession to come out and start attacking him.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be the obligatory sex scandal. Okay. He transported a white minor, you know, across state lines or something like that. They're going to find something, or they're going to make it up. Yeah, we know that's coming. Anyway, I'm going to play Jonathan's scene because I love it, even though it takes over a minute. And we'll be right back. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago, that yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice, pictures on the wall of great minds who advance the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial many times that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred, and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. I almost forgot to make his line live. I got an announcement for you, Jonathan. We've got 3 hours today instead of two. So I checked my account and went, oh, I can go to 3 hours right away. You know, I was thinking of doing an upgrade soon, but I don't need to. So we've got plenty of time today. So that'd be 11 o'clock your time, if we want to. But you don't have to stay that long. In fact, I may not extend it that far. It just depends because people aren't used to it. But, yeah, so don't feel you have to rush and even if a player has to leave. Yeah. Yeah, it's up to you. So I've heard my theme. I'm ready to go.
Okay. We'll have to talk about I'm pretty swamped trying to help one of the Proud Boys defendants from January 6th, and it's a massive job. That's
yeah, tell us what
real.
You can about that. Let's start there. Let's start there if you want. You know,
I really can't yet. I mean, he's
okay,
well, I mean, that's actually a huge topic, and maybe we could go in because the whole thing about the January 6th thing is the idea that only one thing happened on January 6th, that everybody who came to Washington, D.C. all came to beat on police. There was nothing, you know, there's nothing else. A few people did, but 99.9% didn't. And
well,
the
Antifa Black Lives Matter people that were set to help with the insurrection of the Democrats, they're the ones that were the violent ones.
Right.
And the Capitol Police that opened the doors is why I call it the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In, you know, because that's what it was for most people.
Right.
Yeah, they blocked some doors,
and
but
that's
not
what
all
I'm
of them, certainly. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to try to see if we can get what we're talking about. And a lot of the lawyers in these things are cooperating together very well, which is wonderful.
Great.
They, most of them, I mean, some of the defendants are flipping and it is true that under federal law, basically everybody's guilty. if a prosecutor wants to indict someone, the laws mm-hmm. are so broad and then overinterpreted by the judges that you know the entire population of the United States is guilty. It's just a question of whether or not somebody wants to indict you.
Something to look into right there. That's a huge topic, but the difference in federal law, because
yep.
the Constitution doesn't even allow for like 99% of the things that are now against federal law. Constitution doesn't allow for it. Only allows for treason, bribery, and counterfeiting, as far as I know. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some challenge to that, mm-hmm. but basically, like you're charging Zachary. I mean, let's say you're charged with conspiring to hold a picnic, but then you just want people to think that, and then there was a robbery down the street.
Okay.
So they're using all the evidence that or like I was talking to my consultant friend yesterday that. You decide to go out for the evening with a friend out to the mm-hmm. clubs, and there's all this email saying, hey, let's go. What time do you want to go? You know, I'll meet you at such and such a place. Mm-hmm. And then while you're on that trip, your friend jumps out of the car at the corner and does a drug deal.
Yeah.
Did you conspire to have to do the drug deal because you participated in the goal of, so you had a purpose of going out clubbing that night. But there was no purpose to go buy drugs. And that's, the flagrant dishonesty of the indictments here. And even though one judge was offended at the idea that he might consider politics, it's all, it may not be politics for him, but it's all politics in terms of, in terms of the dishonesty by the Federal Bureau of Intimidation and the Department of Justice.
Hey, we called them political prisoners from day one. You know, now that term is catching on, but I think our show was the first where we actually said these people are political prisoners. This is a political objective. This is a DC gulag. They're being put in there purposely to make examples of them, to scare other people from acting independently and doing the right thing, which, of course, is to prove that, President Nobody is occupying the White House right now. That's what's going on.
Right. Well, the thing is there are a lot of – I hope you can hear me all right. I'm in the middle of a monsoon.
No, you're fine. You sound great. No, this is good. Yeah.
That's good. I just feel like being outdoors here. But, okay, so great.
Nope.
I'm learning a lot about, the 14,000 hours of video that haven't been released. A lot of those are because they're claiming that views from the security cameras would reveal too much about the Capitol's security.
Oh, system. Like the flash bang grenades that were launched or the rifles that were pointed at Trump supporters or all the other things I've seen on video? Is that what they're worried about?
They're saying just the camera views themselves.
Oh.
Although
well, let us decide that. You can decide that.
Yeah, yesterday the chief, this is people cannot comprehend. This is a public building. There are two gift shops. In the building, there school children have tours, and there are public galleries built into the House and Senate chambers, not for people mm-hmm. to look at an empty room, but so the citizens could watch their representatives at work in session.
Mm-hmm. I've been there. Yeah.
So, for example, one of the things that my defendant Zachary Real. They allege that he entered the building at 2:53 p.m., but Congress recessed at 2:18 p.m. So they're accusing him of obstructing a session of Congress or an official proceeding that was in recess.
Yeah,
that kind of nonsense.
Conveniently in recess too. It's amazing how fast they abdicated their duty to maintain the challenge, the electoral challenge count. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Here's one of the problems. One of the many problems here is suppose 100 people demonstrate, mm-hmm. Completely First Amendment protected activity. They just exercise their right of free speech to peaceably assemble, to petition the government for redress of their grievances, and it's 100 people, no problem. Now say that 1,000 people do the exact same thing. Now what if it's 10,000 people? You know, no change in the character of the activity. Does it become a threat merely by the quantity? You know, if what they're doing is perfectly appropriate, but then the Congress mm-hmm. looks out the window and says, "Oh my God, we've kicked off the people we're supposed to be representing."
You can say pissed off,
and they're outside.
Care. You can say pissed off a bunch of people. I don't care.
Right, but the thing is that so if they, you know, is it the sheer? So what happens is then the U.S. Capitol. Why did the Congress recess?
Why didn't they order the doors closed? You know, they had the doors open.
Yeah.
The only way those people got in over the time that they got in was because the doors were open. They didn't break them open.
The other thing I'm pointing out is that the Capitol building, and this is what's keeping me busy getting all these details, the Capitol mm-hmm. building is as big as a small cruise ship.
Yeah.
It's 750 feet long. So different things were happening in different places. But the thing is that the reason Congress recessed was because the U.S. Capitol Police advised it. You know, unlike the Kavanaugh proceeding where they actually went in and disrupted the proceeding,
mm-hmm.
the Capitol Police disrupted the proceeding.
That's interesting.
Not the people. And they did it mainly, as I recall from the news, from the reports of pipe bombs. And but the thing is, if you say, well, it was a threat. Well, what's the threat? Just because you have large numbers of people who you've pissed off, you know, it's so if the nature of the protest, with few exceptions, is that, you know, a lot of people are demonstrating instead of a few.
Mm-hmm.
The Capitol Police says.
They're demonstrating outside, but they weren't even demonstrating because they support what was going on.
Well, the people outside were demonstrating.
Oh, okay.
Well, then they were loud.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's why I'm glad, because you were there, so you know.
And, you know, this video, it's interesting because there's video of a church choir that was set up, obviously with a permit,
mm-hmm.
On one side, and then on the other side, people, you know, shouting. So there's a video contrasting the two. But anyway, So that's the kind of thing. For example, the indictment says, well, it says that Zachariel encouraged people to come to stop the steal, mm-hmm. the Stop the Steal protest. But they don't identify or define what is that. I mean, it's such a gaping hole that, you know, a first-year legal associate would know. You have to, if you're going to say he encouraged people to come to a Stop the Steal protest, you better define what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they did, it would be clear that it was not attack the Capitol. But that's the kind of sloppiness that they're getting away with. And then, for example, they say that at the entrance at 12:53 p.m., mm-hmm. a group of people. Now notice how like a group of people enter, you know, approach the barriers and tore down the barriers. And then it says a crowd followed. Including these four
later.
Guys.
Yeah.
But then they say that he didn't enter until 2:53 p.m. So they've covered 2 hours, a two-hour gap between a group of people who we don't know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Tore down
we do.
The barriers.
We don't know officially who it is. I can tell you. Well, I can guess. It's Antifa, Black Lives Matter, undercover FBI, you know, Capitol Hill operatives, you know, paid dissenters, like the guy, I forgot the person that you know, rallied against and made all kinds of films. I'm going to be there in the Capitol. Watch me. You know, so, yeah, we know exactly what happened. Here's the problem, though, the timeline, because Trump spoke an hour late. So there's always something that, you know, the best laid plans are thrown aside by a random event. And the random event that points out all the problems for these people, and I'm sure you can capitalize on this, is the fact that Trump started his speech an hour late, which means he ended an hour late. So the people who were already walking into the Capitol, the planned walk-in, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, agitators, paid dissidents, and operatives of the deep state, they came in early, but Trump was still speaking. Now, obviously, they didn't communicate to hold that off for an hour, because they came in at their scheduled time, you know, to disrupt the proceedings in Congress and blame it on Trump supporters. But Trump supporters weren't there yet. they were still down at the Ellipse. They were still down watching the president speak. And they still had a 45-minute walk to get to the Capitol. Well, there's your 2 hours, right? So you had an hour of the speech that went long, and then you have another, you know, 45 minutes to an hour to get to the Capitol. And that's why your friend was there, or your client was there late. He wasn't there late at all. He was there on time.
We have a video.
Yeah.
We have a video of him and a couple other Proud Boys, you know, saying, should we go in? Should we? And this is after somebody says, I heard that they've evacuated the Capitol. So they're outside. Mm-hmm. After they've evacuated, they say, should we go in? And their attitude, the attitude is like, and it's very hard to hear, but the attitude is like, should we go in? Should we not go in? I don't know. So, you know, they had no advanced planning. They were just like,
well, they weren't
everybody's going in. Why don't we go in?
Yeah.
You know, and
but why would they?
No,
why would they wait? Why would they? Well, if there wasn't a conspiracy, why would they have to negotiate when to go in? Why would they have to talk to each other? They would just go in,
right? Because
if they're just going in,
and they,
and
there's another video that was just is just being produced. And again, most of these videos are under a protective order. We can't,
of course they are,
release them yet. But
goes against the narrative.
But there's a documentary, and this has been discussed openly in the open hearings that. That there's a documentary by Heinrich Block, who followed the Proud Boys, for 90, and there's a 90-minute video of them, you know, over at the Ellipse and wandering around. They stop for half an hour at the food trucks to have lunch. You know, they're this is you know what kind of
some capital takeover,
and then they decide. they just stop and. Sit around and stand around and have lunch, and then they, I don't know if it says it on the video, but their feeling is that well, if all these people are going to the Capitol and our job is to protect the crowds, we better go wander over there.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's the thing. But I don't know how much time we have.
Well, we've gotten 15 minutes past the hour, but what I want to do is talk about the Proud Boys and who they are, and then we'll get into the Durham thing. So just quickly tell me who the Proud Boys are. Or you something you wanted to say? I think I interrupted you there.
No, I wanted to get into the Durham thing, we're going to not have much time. But the Proud Boys, of course, are led by Enrico Terrio, a black man from Cuba. And they say that 20% of their membership are black or Hispanics. Now, you could say,
that's a racist white supremacist?
True.
See, I always heard they're racist white supremacists.
Now,
you're just disproving the whole theory.
Racist white supremacists.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's whether it's true or not that 20% of their membership are minorities, a racist white supremacist group wouldn't say that 20% of our people are black and Hispanics.
That's true.
They wouldn't want it. They wouldn't want to say, you know, it to be known that you know we're pretty bad at being racist white supremacists. And they, but the, what they do believe is that Western civilization. Is worth defending and has produced most of the benefits for mankind. And they're against the attack on Western civilization, you know, which is not exclusively white.
No, but it's interesting. You know, there's something that Dr. Price said earlier. This is about three or four months ago now. He was talking about white supremacy. And he says, the definition of the real white supremacy, the one that they're not talking about, you assume it's based on white people wanting to, you know, kick everybody else out of the country. That's not what I mean by white supremacy. It's the supremacy of Western Judeo-Christian thought that God creates rights, that we're endowed by our creator with certain rights. That is the supremacy. That is what they're trying to dispute, that we are individuals, that government is here to protect the individual. The sole purpose of government is to protect, you know, life, liberty, and property. That's their job. In fact, the biggest job of government is to protect us from government. It's kind of ironic, but that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
You know, and so when they say white supremacy, that's what they're against. They're against the supremacy of the Judeo-Christian individual rights. You know, God creates our by birthright, our rights, endowment. That's what they mean by white supremacy. It's not just a race thing so much as a philosophical, ideological thing. And once he said that, everything else made sense to me.
Well, and that's why the people who stand up for those bedrock principles are automatically deemed racist because they are against the principles, not skin color, you know, the left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
that's how Larry Elder became
a
white guy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He's because it has nothing to do with skin color for them. It is about the principles upon which we live and are governed and people, you know, a whole topic one could have is the meaning of culture. because when you talk about culture, people think you're racist because it's, you know, but, and there is a sense in which culture means what kind of foods do you eat, how do you dance, you know, what, you know, traditional dress, and there are aspects of culture that are unique to nationality, but culture, the more important meaning of culture is exactly the principles by which we live, and our concepts of government and our concepts of, you know, for example, the idea that women are equal to men, societal cultural concept that is not shared everywhere, shall we say. So, and I don't know, maybe there's a, you know, societal principle is a better word to keep it from, but when you assert Western culture, meaning, you know, the principles of by which we're organized as a society, when you hold those up, the left screams racism. And that's what they're doing here. So Proud Boys does stand up for, you know, for the West. You know, even though there's a, you know, the West is not, was not exclusively built by white people, and it's not exclusively inhabited by white people. They're not, you know, that's more important than immigration. Enrico Terrio is an immigrant from Cuba. And, you know, so he's not, they're not necessarily against, against immigration. It's their top issue. It's more about, you know, the bedrock fabric of Western civilization, which of course the left wants to destroy because they just hate, I mean, basically, you know, they do what their father wants, for the spiritual among us. So anyway, so the Proud Boys are, you know, they kind of started out as a, as like they say, a fraternity. And their originally, their main activities were watching sporting events and drinking alcoholic activities, alcoholic beverages. And then they would also go and provide volunteer private security to patriotic demonstrations and stand between Antifa and the vulnerable demonstrators.
The Guardian Angel.
Here, you know, for example,
Guardian Angel all over again.
Yes. Oh, that's, wow, I forgot about that, that the Guardian Angel.
Yeah, Curtis
Sliwa. So the thing is that, you know, so for example, the government and everybody will say that where the Proud Boys show up, you know, violence follows. Okay, who started the violence? Not the Proud Boys. You know, so their attitude is that we won't start it, but we'll finish it, is their philosophy. You know, if you start something, we'll finish it. And,
we should,
you know, they provided, like Lauren Witzke in Delaware, running for Senate, the Proud Boys went and provided security for some of her events, you know, and nothing happened. It was completely, you know, benign. So, but they've been vilified for the reasons we just said. It's because how dare you stand up? And you know, the biggest people who come under attack are conservative minorities.
We just talked about that.
Attractive young conservative women.
Yeah.
You know, blacks. I mean, because they represent the greatest threat to the leftist narrative. Like Larry Elder. Anyway, so how much time do we have here?
Oh, we got you got about 18 minutes, but I'm gonna play this real fast as we change subjects.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
Now that everybody's awake, let's get on to Durham. I have my fun. I got more buttons than you can imagine here. I have so much fun. Go ahead.
Last Thursday, Durham invited John Durham, who is a U.S. attorney for the state of Connecticut, District of Connecticut, was appointed special counsel to investigate the Russia hoax. He has been asleep for the last 3 years.
well, that's his job.
And,
he's deep state, right? Isn't that his job to not prosecute what he's supposed to prosecute?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he did a pretty damn good indictment, but then it's putting a sacrifice of the little fish, you know, to the gods, sacrifice, you know, throwing a little fish in the volcano. And there's so much he didn't follow up with, but that's the limitations of 5 years. mm-hmm. for Sussman was 2 days later. So he waited until a couple days before the 5-year statute of limitations expired, which means that many of the other things and other people mm-hmm. mentioned, the statute of limitations has expired.
Again, that's his job. That was his job to wait on that so that it would expire. That's how Hillary gets, you know, a free pass. That's how, who's that guy that in the Senate? Schumer gets a free pass. And all the operatives, the Rahm Emanuels or whoever else is involved, all the people involved in the fake dossier and the real Russia collusion and Uranium One and everybody who is involved in real Russian scandals, you know, the pipeline, the Russian oil pipeline, all those people, that was John Durham's purpose. I'm convinced of it, was to wait until the absolute last minute, do something, just said that he did something. He's got this little minor character in there. Hillary wasn't even questioned. I mean, before you get into the Durham thing, how long does it actually take to do a real legal investigation? It doesn't take 3 years. You know, what would be like a couple of months maybe of full-time work to really just – and you interview the major players, you take their depositions. What's the big deal with these three-year investigations?
It's hard to say. I mean, if they have the Federal Bureau of Intimidation at his fingertips and, mm-hmm. and other resources, it shouldn't be. But January 6th happened,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
the grand jury was convened on January 8th.
Hmm. Oh, that's fascinating.
So
2 days to investigate, you know, the political prisoners to assemble their fake evidence to throw these people away, and 3 years to not investigate Hillary, you know, Barack Obama, Susan Rice, and everybody else that was involved in the real insurrection and coup. Fascinating. That's my point.
Right. So the thing is, it's like the greatest political education one can get, not the only education, but the greatest thing is the BBC TV series from the 1980s, Yes, Prime Minister, mm-hmm. where the chief bureaucrat he was given the task of investigating whether somebody was a Soviet spy. And then when he dies, he leaves in his will that he was a Soviet spy, and he flaunts it at everybody. And Humphrey, you know, Sir Humphrey Appleby says, mm-hmm. it's like, well, the purpose of investigation is to find nothing wrong. You know, I did, you know, he's complaining to his other bureaucrats that, uh-huh. especially if it is true. And he looks offended. So the purpose of a government investigation is to find that there isn't, you know, that there's nothing. You know, we investigated ourselves and we find ourselves innocent.
How about that? It's like the election audits.
Durham thing.
It's like the government election audits, you know, and that's why they have to do the real ones,
exactly.
The real forensic audits, because the government audits, they recounted the votes they already counted wrong again.
Right, and I guess you'll do the leak from the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors in your election.
Kind of covered that yesterday. We got sidetracked. You know, I mean, I don't. That's incidental to what's really the main event is tomorrow. The main event when they release the audit.
Yeah, but it's true. But the thing is that they say not only were they afraid that they would lose, that they would have been found that they didn't win, but they also criticized the recount as being sloppy and inadequate.
Yeah.
Off the record in this recording.
Yeah,
so
Gateway Pundit has that story.
So Durham,
I post it, but I haven't really gone over it because we just got stuff.
Yeah, you should look
at that.
Let's
go back to Durham.
So anyway, let me get back to Durham. But the big news, the big question is, mm-hmm. if all this stuff is in the indictment, why isn't he indicting all these other people? And my friend, mm-hmm. the retired lawyer, is talking about this. He says, why only one count? Lying to the FBI? Why not obstruction of justice? Why not, you know, because we bring boxing gloves to a gunfight.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be, you know, it isn't done, old boy. We don't actually go to the max like the Democrats do. So, you know, if what they say, Sussman worked at Perkins Coie.
Mm-hmm.
Who was basically not a law firm. It was a, it's a political activism organization.
Okay.
And it was all through and through every aspect of this. Now, the big thing that comes out of this is the involvement of a tech firm, which investigators have pretty much identified as Eric Schmidt, who's a top executive at Alphabet Incorporated,
mm-hmm.
That owns Google and what's the other the other one that, oh, shoot, I have to think.
I think Instagram and YouTube possibly too, right? Is it Instagram and YouTube?
Yeah, but there's a, but the, oh, CrowdStrike. They own CrowdStrike.
What's that?
The cybersecurity one that faked up the DNC hack.
Oh.
When,
interesting.
When, what's his name? Sean, the guy was murdered.
Seth Rich?
They, you know, Seth Rich, and they faked up. I mean, because if you read it, the weasel words are just incredible. You know, so they faked up this whole idea of a Russia hack of the DNC.
Right.
You know, you have to read for words like there were fingerprints, not proof, of the use of software that is often used by, you know, Russia. Well, that doesn't mean it was used by them this time.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I use a pencil and Vladimir Putin used a pen. That doesn't prove that I have ever met Vladimir Putin because we both use pens.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to watch for this language. So the whole thing that CrowdStrike did was completely fake. They're owned by Alphabet. I didn't realize they were owned by Alphabet Incorporated. It is very clear that Eric Schmidt used the resources of Google to run a huge part of the Hillary campaign. And that's a campaign violation. The fact that they were lying and using things about that they were accessing people's private records, private non-public DNS server information. I mean, it's alleged in there, and that's what takes them so long, is that Google resources of all kinds were used to fake up this Russia hoax against Trump and in detail. So why hasn't he been indicted? You know, and that now Trump needs to file a RICO lawsuit, in which he may be able to go back 10 years instead of 5 years. And Durham could maybe bring a RICO criminal case. But the thing is, it's so blatantly obvious that the law firm was used, because I mean, Perkins Coie is a political, you know, it's kind of a joke to even call it a law firm. It's a lobbying / you know, political fixer firm.
Money laundering? Do they do money laundering too? They, like campaign contributions, do money laundering
yeah,
as well?
I would say yes, because they build $12 million,
right,
and then turn around and hire these political groups like Fusion GPS.
Hmm.
So by billing political campaign activity as legal fees and reporting it, they violated the election laws, the campaign finance disclosure laws, by misrepresenting, you know, by misrepresenting the partisan campaign activity as legal fees. Now, I'm not saying they can't do it, but presenting the nature of campaign expenditures, they violated the law, and that's similar to what the tobacco litigation, where tobacco companies were running research through their law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said, no, you can't. That's you can't call that privileged. It's not legal work. It's research on the effect of tobacco, and just running it through a law firm is not valid.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say they did money laundering in terms of hiding what campaign money was actually going for, and hiding the fact. And Sussman, the guy who's been indicted, was a lawyer there, one of the main lawyers behind Eric Elias. Elias. And, you know, I don't know why he's not been indicted yet.
Well, what about Durham himself? Why isn't he being investigated for stalling? Why isn't he being investigated for doing such a lousy job? Why was he even allowed to stay on the Durham investigation when Durham himself, you know, really was doing nothing? He's like Mueller. Mueller didn't even know what the case was when he went before Congress. He had Democrat hack operatives hired by some underling at the FBI that ran the whole thing. Mueller was the figurehead. This guy's the figurehead. Who's really behind it? Who stalled the investigation? Who was working with Mueller that we don't know? Let's get to that. We got Claire on the line too, so I'm gonna get to her in just a couple minutes too. But I want to get our usual background, you know, so she knows what's happening. But who's in the Mueller? Nobody's ever talked about who's in the Durham team. Who are these people? who held it up, who stalled, who didn't report to the public, who didn't hold press conferences, who didn't investigate, who didn't want to bring Hillary on the stand, who didn't want to interview anybody important. What's behind this?
I don't know.
You know.
I mean, it's
isn't that interesting?
I have not looked at his team, but I
has anybody looked at this? Has anybody looked at Durham at all? I just figured he was a deep state operative, so I really dismissed him early on. You know, I thought, well, he's not doing it. If he didn't do anything in the first 6 months, I thought, that's it. He's stalling. But has anybody actually investigated the investigator?
Well, yeah, I mean, and Trump even made some comments like that, but
yeah.
he should have done something about it. But the
he should have.
He's
done a lot of things.
I mean, and part of it, of course, is that Barr was, you know, Attorney General Barr had like one foot in the deep state ship, you know, boat, and one foot in the pretending to, you know, doing a few good things for Trump. But
he's another operative.
You know, he was
Paul
the
Ryan,
one who appointed. He was
House
the one who appointed.
Yeah. Hmm? Well, of course, yeah. Bush appointed Barr. Barr appoints Durham. It's a club. You know, it's
right.
A deep state
so
club.
So you have to wonder, what did Sussman do to piss people off so that they indicted him and not everybody else?
Or what killed the parachute?
I mean,
what
I'm talking in hyperbole here, of course.
No, but that's a good point. Well, here's the other question: is what are they going to give him secretly? What house on Martha's Vineyard? What great perk is he going to get for having to go through something so that Durham looks like he did something? Usually, these people get some kind of reward for that, for you know, throwing themselves on the sword, as they say, which apparently actually happened.
Well,
way back when.
If they do it secretly, obviously we don't know about it, but one can speculate. It does make you wonder why, you know, why wouldn't they bring down Eric Schmidt at Google? And the other thing is
well, because Google funds the Democrat Party, and Google's making billions of dollars off Big Pharma. That's why they push vaccines. It's a club.
Yeah. So they, but the thing is, they also say that the tech executive in his position had access to other tech companies. Because he was such a powerful leader, so this is a RICO case.
Yeah,
you know, this is with the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act. All
right.
Of these tech companies that participated are all guilty in one form. And again, the thing is, like I say, in the conspiracy that Zach Real is being charged with, the idea is that if a bunch of people say we're going to go rob a bank. And one guy says, okay, I'll bring the donuts. And he brought the donuts. He's as guilty as everybody else under conspiracy laws. So
but
everybody here in this Russia hoax,
right?
They're all guilty of the conspiracy.
But don't you have to know that you're in a conspiracy to be guilty of it? Isn't part of our criminal, but isn't part of isn't it part of our criminal justice system? If you commit a crime through negligence or ignorance,
you
still have committed a crime, but it's nowhere near as bad as if you premeditated and do it. In other words, if you're in the Capitol building and you're being charged with insurrection,
what
was that? I'm sorry.
Right, but I mean the idea, but it's being totally eroded. Like everything else. But the thing is that, you know, if everybody gets together and says, hey, we're going to get together and go to the park, and somebody says, hey, I'll bring the donuts.
Right.
And then they decide to rob a bank. The person, you know, and they can't, they will try to, but they can't prove that he's part of the conspiracy. He has to have the purpose.
Yeah.
And this is where the courts have been eroding those requirements of mens rea, the state of mind.
Okay.
But yeah, you have to be in a conspiracy. You have to have agreed, knowingly and intentionally or purposefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although they're weakening that criminal, goal. So you can't conspire, or you can't be guilty of conspiring. So you know to hold a picnic.
If you have to know and intend. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, if you're not actually conspiring, if you're accused of conspiring to overthrow the government, you're like, what? What are you talking about? I was walking through the Capitol building. What's the problem here? Don't you have to prove that you actually premeditate that you – I mean, insurrection requires planning. You don't just walk in and go, oh, I'll cause an insurrection with all these other people who are here. It doesn't work that way. So a conspiracy requires planning. It requires premeditation. You can't just say, you know, that you're, you know, all these people in the Capitol building are guilty of an insurrection when they weren't armed, they weren't organized, they were randomly walking around, they had no idea what was going on, and now they're being thrown in jail for political means. You know, what's the conspiracy? Conspiracy to do what? To walk? You know,
well, there's about six different counts. One is to obstruct the official proceeding, and there's been all kinds of argument about, so this, that statute's never been used like this before.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, a conspiracy to interfere with law enforcement, even though there's none of that.
The ones that opened the doors?
Group of defendants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, but this is, I mean, and the big thing that drives me absolutely nuts is the idea that Enrico Terrio, chair of the Proud Boys, says don't wear your quote-unquote colors.
Yeah.
You know, they have these golf shirts, and sometimes they have paramilitary uniforms unofficial that they wear, and people find that is one of the things that people find intensive, because they have this like paramilitary dress when they stand between Antifa and the defenseless demonstrators.
We can come the golf shirt rebellion. I gotta hold you up. In fact, you can continue on, but I want to get clear on the conversation too, and I have to take a quick break for a second.
Well, let me just finish the thought.
I'm sorry.
So they're saying that normally they wear this stuff, and that offends people. So on January 6th, they didn't wear it, and this is like this big, horrible thing that they didn't wear their quote-unquote colors that day.
Mm.
It's like, oh, my God, they didn't wear their Proud Boy outfits. I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? So this is part of the conspiracy. Enrico Terrio told them not to wear their Proud Boy outfits.
Right.
On that day, which to me means he was disassociating the Proud Boys. I know you're going to go, but you're not going as Proud Boys.
Right.
But to all of official Washington, the courts, and the prosecutor, this is like evidence of guilt that they didn't wear something.
Oh.
So.
Oh. Guilt by
anyway, I'm probably out of time.
No. Well, listen, we're fluid today. We actually, I'm going to tell Claire too, we got 3 hours, so we can go past our top of the next hour. But I got to mention this really quickly because we have a new sponsor here at Action Radio. If you're wondering why the Write Your Laws website looks so much better, it's because they're Eric Colley. So I want to let you know, if you need help with your small business marketing, Eric Colley offers proven cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One, gain thousands of followers, and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. So if you want to get in touch with Eric Colley, who is our master webmaster and does all kinds of other wonderful stuff for small business, phone number 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. You can email him at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And the website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. And if you miss it, then listen to the podcast in about, I don't know, whenever we get done with the show today. All right, let's bring on Claire. And see, Claire, have you been following this, the whole, you know, I learned stuff on the Proud Boys today, but the entire January 6th, you know, fake insurrection covering up the real insurrection. What do you think?
Well, hi. Good to be with you guys again.
Good morning.
Not so much. No, I haven't. I mean, I read what and watch what's come out in the media, but haven't really made a focus out of it, no.
Okay. Has it registered with some of the foreign countries watching us, you know, allies, enemies, anybody, competitors? Are you getting any reactions to specifically January 6th from around the world?
No, I haven't seen any. Mm-mm.
Okay. I guess they're just laughing at us. All right. Jonathan, did you have any more?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jonathan, did you have further points on that? Or you pretty much covered it? I just want to make sure.
I did, but now I've forgotten. I think... But like I say, it's just reading some of this stuff. It's like I say, anybody in the country can be, you know, if someone wants to indict you,
uh-huh.
And the courts will, and you know, the courts are supposed to be the arbiters of justice, and they're, you know, they side with the prosecution. So, our law, you know, I'm not the first person to say that, you know, I think that some former prosecutor had a book that, you know, everybody commits six felonies before lunch.
Yeah.
It's just our laws are so broad. That it's just ridiculous.
Well, that's a judicial reform that we need to talk about, you know, at another time. But I certainly want to look into that. But we got more projects to do this morning. From our first guest on, we're constantly getting projects. Claire, there's a bunch of places we can go. I kind of leave it to you to pick your favorite disgusting moment of the week, and then you know, we can. And I'll have questions, of course. But where do you think we should go? What bugs you the most?
Well, I don't think I've paid much attention this week.
That's okay.
Let's see.
Because I have a list.
Well, let's hear your list.
Okay, let's start with the submarine, the great submarine,
oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
Crisis with France. Because, you know, as someone who, you know, my father was Australian, you know, I have a bunch of family down there. I spent 4 years there growing up. I got a real, you know, fond spot in my heart for Australia. In fact, I want to go back and visit at some point. So Australia, it's interesting. The Australian military was never looked upon as a big deal. I remember they had two aircraft carriers, and they leased, I think, 24 Phantom jets in the United States, I think five of which I saw in an air show, which is like, you know, like a quarter of their entire Air Force fighter group. So it's never been a huge thing. So the idea that Australia, with, what, 30 million people now maybe? It's like it's about half the size of California in population, you know, is getting nuclear submarines. It's kind of interesting. And so are they fitting in with the whole Quad idea? Is this really going to be a threat to China that they're going to think is credible? I mean, are these new, brand new submarines? What do you know about this? Then we'll get into what happened with France.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. So what happened is that mm-hmm. The French government had been apparently in negotiations with Australia for mm-hmm. quite a long period of time. I think it might have been years, even.
Wow.
On the sale of conventionally powered submarines from France to Australia. The talks did not conclude. They did not they didn't result in a deal. Well, then just recently the US and the UK kind of slipped in behind, mm-hmm. went to the Aussies and concluded a deal to provide them nuclear-powered submarines. And this is a huge technological step ahead up from mere conventionally powered. It means that the submarines can stay submerged much longer.
Mm-hmm.
They can run much more quietly and be undetectable. It's very serious technology, and the U.S. had not previously shared that technology with many at all. U.K., yes, mm-hmm. but not many at all. So this is
Iran.
A real step for the Aussies to gain this level of submarine technology, and it's seen in the context, of course, of the front, Quad included, as mm-hmm. Australia, of course, is part of the Quad, against the growing and menacing aggression of the CCP.
Yeah. See, I think it's a good thing that Australia is getting the nuclear subs. But you mentioned powered, and I assumed that a nuclear submarine was nuclear armed. But that's not the case,
no,
is
no,
it?
No. It's not going to be nuclear armed at all. No.
Oh, see that, but perception. I mean, my initial impression is. And let me ask Jonathan and Gene, when you heard that Australia was getting nuclear submarines, did you assume, as I did, that they'd be nuclear armed, or did you just think they were nuclear powered? Because this is a huge perception difference, I think. Jonathan, Gene, who wants to?
I didn't think about it that much, except that I know I heard news reports about that the mm-hmm. French were diesel powered, so it kind of drew me to the engine.
Okay. See, I thought, and a nuclear missile is one thing we learned from Dr. Peter Pry, who's on Mondays. I got to get him on with you guys, too. I think it'd be a fascinating thing. But anyway, but there are several new generations of nuclear weapons that are much smaller, much lower yields, much lower radiation. In fact, sometimes little to no radiation at all. And so it wouldn't be a big jump to have a nuclear torpedo, for example, with a very small nuclear warhead.
No. But yeah, but that's not part of this deal.
That's not what they're doing.
Part of the. No, not at all. Australia does not have nuclear weapons, nor apparently does it want any.
Yeah.
But nuclear-powered submarines, that is a whole huge, step upwards in the technology of submarines, enabling them to patrol waters in defense of, you know, their own neighborhood quietly, deeply. They can stay submerged for months at a time,
mm-hmm.
being nuclear-powered, and quietly, meaning they're not detectable.
Yeah. Yeah, there's such a quantum leap in technology. I'm not really big on sub technology, but if, you know, a diesel powered sub has basically, you know, a diesel engine, you know, that runs it and it charges batteries. And so they can't run the diesel underwater because the fumes are going to kill everybody. So they have some kind of snorkel device or something when they're up close to the surface, but they can't go that deep. And once they submerge, a diesel or conventionally powered sub runs on batteries the whole time. Batteries run down. It takes a lot of battery power to run a submarine. That's why they're so limited in what they can do and why nuclear submarines make such a difference, because the nuclear power is far more powerful. You know, they don't need to charge the batteries. I think they make their own oxygen somehow. I'm not sure how that works, but it's so superior that, as Claire says, they can stay underwater for, you know, months. Claire, have I got that about right?
Yeah,
I'll
but
sure
now here's, I mean, here's the thing. Could this all have been managed with better diplomacy towards the French, one of our key primary allies? Yeah, I think it probably could have. You know, nobody's ever accused this administration of, you know, diplomatic finesse. But they were going to be miffed. They, the French, were going to be miffed no matter that they lost this deal and that it went to the, you know, the Brits and the Aussies. They do not have, you know, this deal with the United States. So they were going to be miffed anyway, but I also do think it could have been managed better. I do hear that Biden has, I guess, apparently set a date coming up in, I guess it's October, to meet with Macron and perhaps try to smooth things over.
Group hug, make nice. Kiss on the cheek with the mask.
Obvious, isn't it? Jonathan?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
No, we got most of it. Just to make sure Claire heard.
Oh, just to state the obvious, shouldn't it have been the other way around?
In terms of what?
First, and then
I'm not sure what you're asking. Help me out here.
Oh, I'm just saying he wants to meet with Macron after the bomb is blown up instead of, you know, before.
Well, you know, this goes to my theory, you know, my perennial question with Claire and you is this incompetence or is this on purpose? Did they mean to slight the French because they don't care about the French because they're arrogant in the same way that, you know, they do everything, it seems to me, on purpose, even though they try and call it an accident. Claire, what do you
think?
You
know, it's hard to draw the line between their incompetence and their you know, willful, I don't know what you call it, the willful behavior that,
yeah.
that they demonstrate, for example, towards Israel. Hard to know. I mean, they're so incredibly incompetent in every way.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that there's malign intent behind there, too. But why in the world towards the French? The French are our buddies. Do we see eye to eye and everything? No, of course not.
Yeah,
but
it wouldn't be a country,
you know,
without France.
You don't
yeah.
treat longtime allies like this. You mm-hmm. do your best, you know, to let them know the deal is coming. This is
mm-hmm.
what we're going to do. Yes, you're going to lose out on your deal. But, you know, it's business, guys. No hard feelings. I mean, something. But they didn't
yeah.
do that. Best I know, they didn't even try. And now, yeah, they're going back after the fact to try to soothe the Gallic peak.
Do you think there's a language snobbery that the British, Australians, and we Americans speak English, and the French obviously speak French, you know, and there's a cultural difference?
The French speak English perfectly.
Well, that's true, too, yeah. So you don't think there's a cultural difference?
No.
Okay. All right.
I mean, you know, I will say the U.S., excuse me, the U.S., UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, of
mm-hmm.
course, are the members of the Five Eyes. And these are English-speaking allies in this particular grouping. But that has to do with intelligence sharing and
okay.
would not does not extend to things like, you know, strategic or military activities like this.
Yeah. You mentioned Israel before, and the Iron Dome, the replacement missiles, they've been firing off an awful lot of them. I think the Democrats didn't have the replacement in their budget, surprise, surprise, but I think they're trying to do it as a separate item.
No, it wasn't
the budget. They took it out. They took it out. Oh, okay. So what happened with that?
The good news, of course, is that now a separate funding bill for $1 billion for the replacement of Iron Dome missiles has been proposed.
Now, why did they take it out, do you think, and why did they put it back, or why are they trying to put it back?
The ones who are trying to put it back are not the ones who tried to take it out, obviously.
Right.
They're the ones who stand by Israel, support Israel. inside of the Democrat Party, you know, there is a strong contingent of, I mean, you have to say it, they're anti-Semites. They hate Israel.
Go ahead, say
they
it.
Hate Jews.
Yep.
There is the Squad, of course, which is very influential. I don't know why, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've told you guys before, right? Squad comes straight out of Mao's Little Red Book.
You have,
Mao's
but you're going to
Little
always...
Red Book, which is a set of quotations from Mao. A squad is a unit of communist revolution leadership.
Oh.
In any case, the Squad has a lot of influence inside the Democrat Party, and they probably had a lot of influence over this particular decision to take the funding out of the proposed bill. But again, it's now been removed from that bill, but proposed as a standalone bill all by itself, $1 billion just to fund the replacement of the Iron Dome missiles.
But standalone bills, you know, just because it's been proposed doesn't mean it's in committee, doesn't mean it's been passed, doesn't mean they can't stall it through the next thing. Oh, gee, sorry, we got busy. You know, I know how this works in Congress.
No, but this item can no longer be sort of buried within 10,000 pages of the rest of a much larger bill. It's going to get focus, and it's going to get visibility as a standalone bill. And indeed, I think most of Congress on both sides, the House and the Senate, are strong supporters of Israel and don't want to see this funding removed. So I think the standalone bill is a good idea, and I also think it probably will go through.
Yeah, they also don't want a whole bunch of Israelis killed because they didn't supply the missiles. Let's talk about this, because it's going to be, you know, bad for optics, as they say. I think there's a lot of motivation in there, too.
Well, thinking, you know, of course, the Iron Dome is a purely defensive system.
Mm-hmm.
It intercepts incoming offensively targeted missiles and rockets launched by the Islamic terrorists in Gaza, primarily, although I will say that when we were on a trip to Israel a couple of years ago, staying in a hotel in Tiberias in the Upper Galilee, one night we woke up in the middle of the night not only to hear the roar of Israeli jets headed over our hotel heading north, apparently to pound Iranian Hezbollah targets up on the Golan, but also right over our hotel, an Iron Dome missile intercepted something. And we were all out on our balconies by that point watching, you know, the explosion that took out that incoming missile. It's purely a defensive system. It saves civilian populations because that's what the Islamic terrorists of Gaza, Hamas, are aiming for. They're aiming for civilian population centers. This Iron Dome system protects Israeli citizens of all backgrounds.
It's a great system. I think it should be. I'm surprised Israel doesn't have their own manufacturing of the missiles. I'm sure. I'm surprised we didn't give them the technology to make their own. You know,
is a jointly developed system. We developed this jointly, the U.S. and Israel. It's just that it's hugely expensive, and as you rightly point out, they have been using a lot of the missiles to deflect incoming rockets and missiles from Gaza, and they need replacement, and they're hugely expensive. It really is a lopsided equation when each one of these Iron Dome missiles is, I don't know, what, $100,000 or something?
Yeah.
And, you know, these things that the Hamas terrorists are shooting off, you know, are, I don't know, a couple hundred bucks maybe? It's completely lopsided.
Well, it's harder to...
Then you've got people,
yeah,
you know, complaining that the death count is disproportional because the Israelis have the wherewithal to defend themselves against the Islamic aggression of Hamas. And when Israel strikes back,
mm-hmm,
at missile launch sites inside of Gaza, unfortunately, they are positioned inside of kindergartens and clinics and hospitals, violations completely of international law, and those who defend themselves against such sites are completely in the right under Islam international law. But anyway, so I do think that the Iron Dome standalone bill, will probably get through. Meanwhile, though, Israel is working on other things, including laser-powered defensive measures that would be orders of magnitude less expensive, but also, as the technology progresses, very effective.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because now you're in my gadget world. You know, and you know, we've watched Star Trek. We know about phasers and, you know, things like that, and cool things. And we've heard about laser, you know, I guess anti-satellite weapons, you know, once you're up in space and things like that. How practical are laser anti-missile weapons, you know, in an atmosphere environment?
Oh, very.
Where do they stand?
Very.
Now?
Oh yeah. I mean, this is the next generation.
So what do they do?
Absolutely.
Because laser is light amplification.
They will bring down missiles in flight. They can lock onto target, well, detect,
uh-huh,
lock onto target, and destroy incoming projectiles,
yeah,
that are aimed for Israeli civilian centers.
See, this makes
now,
a lot more sense to me.
It's not completely mature yet. It's,
mm-hmm,
not deployed yet, to the best of my knowledge, but they're working on it.
Yeah, and this makes more sense than, because, you know, the reason I think the missiles, the Iron Dome missiles are so expensive is it's very difficult to hit a missile with another missile, you know, as opposed to the cost of making something you're just kind of lobbing and firing and aiming generally. You know, I mean, Germany in World War II had V1 and then V2 rockets, which weren't especially well guided, but they were incredibly effective because they're aiming for England. And it was kind of hard as England from the coast of France where these missiles were set up. You know, so it makes a huge difference. And what people also don't understand, I think, is that Iron Dome is very humanitarian because, as you say, they're specifically not targeting the missile sites that are located in hospitals and clinics. You know, other nations, you know, still on self-defense could say, look, you're putting these in a hospital. We're going to have to take out your hospital to save our country from your missiles, which you're putting in a hospital, you idiots. And Israel would probably be within their rights to do that, but they're going to look horrible in the process of doing that. But because they're actually stopping the missiles in the air, that is a very humanitarian thing that the terrorists in Gaza, you know, certainly aren't showing. Where do those missiles come from? Are they Iranian, mostly, the missiles from Gaza?
Some are. Some are okay. Locally produced inside of Gaza, perhaps with Iranian assistance, parts, technology, and so forth. And others, yeah, others are smuggled in either by sea or even still some by land across from Egypt.
I've always wondered why Israel. I've always wondered why Israel gave up Gaza. You know, considering all the problems that it causes now,
huge
the land
mistake.
For peace.
Huge mistake.
Would they be better just taking it back?
Every single time that Israel gives up land,
mm-hmm,
to Islamic terrorists, they regret it. That land becomes the base for offensive operations against Israeli citizens.
So I've never understood. I mean, they had the whole Sinai at one point, you know.
They did, Now I can understand giving that back to Egypt. That made sense to me. But Gaza,
yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, historically traditionally Egyptian, and so you know it was not a center of Islamic terrorism once. You know, Egypt took control of it,
mm-hmm,
which they you know, continue to fight against jihadis there to this day. But that made sense to give that back to the responsibility of the Egyptian government. But
right.
Gaza is this teeny, tiny enclave, I mean, right on, you know, Israel's border.
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely nothing except a base of operations for Hamas Islamic Jihad operations against Israeli civilians. That's all it's for. It has no other purpose.
Is it funded by different Arab nations contributing to that?
It is
to go
funded
after Israel?
Massively by Qatar, by Iran.
Okay.
Oh, yes, and by the Europeans.
What? Well, and we're funding
well,
them now, too. Didn't Biden restart the quote,
that
Palestinian aid?
Well, that went to the Palestinian Authority and UNRWA, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm. The Golan Heights, too, is that currently part Israeli, or did they give that
it
all up,
it has been acknowledged, certainly by President Trump, as under Israeli sovereignty. We've been up there. And once you're physically standing up there at the top of the Golan Heights,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking down from those heights onto the Galilee, which is really the agricultural breadbasket of Israel. It's all farms. Yeah, there are towns and villages and cities like Tiberias, yes. But
mm-hmm.
it's mainly farmland. And we actually, I have photos. We climbed in and out of these gunners' turrets that are still up there rusting away,
mm-hmm.
Where the Syrian gunners used to sit with machine guns and take pot shots at the Israeli farmers and villagers down below with total domination from the heights. Israel had control of that strategic land, and President Trump had the strategic wisdom and the loyalty to our friend and ally Israel to declare it under Israeli sovereignty. So the part of it, not the entirety of the Golan Heights, but the part of it that really overlooks Israel is under Israeli sovereignty.
Well, that's good. I was wondering about that. I'd heard that it might be, but I wasn't quite sure. Okay. Let's, in the time we have, and actually we have 3 hours, but I don't think we're going to be going that long. But if you want to extend beyond the top of the hour, you know, anybody wants to call in, feel free. We've got some extra time today. The United Nations, the world is gathering there for their pontifications and speeches. And, of course, you know, President Nobody made a fool of himself. But the fact that he's still there and his words do matter. That whole speech, from climate change to the Palestinian two-state solution to any other embarrassing moment, what do you think the result of that? Or is it just Biden just talking?
Well, I'm not sure that his words do matter.
Okay.
Everybody knows that he is cognitively impaired and declining rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
The speech, you know, somebody wrote that for him. He delivered it in a rather lackadaisical manner, not much energy in it. People, I think, from the representative delegations from around the world in the hall, they listen because it's the U.S. president. But there wasn't anything to listen to. It was a collection of pablum, tired, worn-out phrases that mean nothing. Work with our allies, democratic alliances, and, you know, really kind of meaningless. And they know it. The whole world knows it.
Yeah, and yet he's still there. Isn't that fascinating? Jonathan, Gene, do you have a question for...
Well, how could he not be? I mean, you know.
Huh? Oh, well, we do disagree on this. The Arizona audit is coming out tomorrow, so I still think that... I know you disagree that there is no constitutional procedure to do this, but there's no...
It's not me. I mean, ask the legal experts. Ask Jonathan. Ask J. Christian Adams, who is the person I asked about it.
Yeah.
There is no constitutional remedy at this point.
Yeah.
There isn't any.
See, I disagree with legal experts all the time.
Find it. Tell me what it is.
Okay. Well, it is just basic, theft. It's and restitution. It's as simple as that.
There's
if you
no
steal
such
an election,
thing as restitution for
if you commit election fraud.
An election gone awry. There's nothing like that in the Constitution. Zero.
Well, but this has also never happened before, and the Constitution, you know, is open.
Well, we can't
enough.
Make it up just because it didn't happen before. If it's not in the Constitution or legally derived from the Constitution, we can't do it. Ask
yes.
Jonathan.
Well, let's ask Jonathan. Jonathan? I think we can.
It's never been done before, and I think, you know, I don't know what the solution would be, but I mean, part of the thing is, I mean, in the courts consider that if a court gets it wrong, it still has the power to issue the order even if it was wrong. So that's, you know, might be the idea, and Biden was sworn in, but I don't know.
But if you violate a contract, all right, if you do something where, you know, you've committed fraud, that contract can be dissolved. You know, in the same way, this is an election fraud, and you can decertify. It's been done before, and courts have actually changed election results based on decertification of fraud votes. Now, it's a lot smaller scale. So I think just because this hasn't been done does not mean it can't be done, because we've never had a coup like this before. So does the Constitution say that we have to allow for a coup?
Arizona and any other state can decertify if they want to.
Right.
It doesn't change who's in the Oval Office.
See, I think it
doesn't
make
any difference.
Yeah, but here's what I would argue, is that if the electoral count changes, it takes 270 electoral votes to become president. Right. If it was found that those votes never existed because they were counted fraudulently, that he was never eligible to be inaugurated. And if he was never eligible to be inaugurated, then he's a fraud. Then he's occupying an office. He's usurped an office.
We can say so, but it doesn't change the fact that he's president until 2024.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does, though, because if you take –
I've never heard
decertify,
any lawyer make that argument. None.
Oh, and you know what?
Certainly Christian Adams and other legal experts do not say so.
Hey, listen, legal experts say that Roe v. Wade is constitutional, and that's total nonsense. You know, there's a lot of things, and I don't mind challenging the greatest legal experts in their field, because, you know, just simple logic, you know, simple logic and reason. You know, so this is the reason when I do my constitutional moments, I don't read what other scholars have written, because I want to look at it myself and see what makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that if Biden loses if his electoral count is certified below 270, he could not have been inaugurated. Okay, and therefore, if Arizona does this, changes their Biden electors to Trump, if Georgia does this and Pennsylvania does this, he's below 270. Therefore, he has no legal basis to be there, and he has no legal basis to have ever been inaugurated. Besides the fact, and I went over this yesterday, the Sidney Powell article, that they still haven't finished their January 6th electoral challenge to the states. So they could not have proceeded with the inauguration on that basis alone. So I don't care what these legal experts are saying, and if they want to, if you provide me the articles, I'll see if I can go through them from these legal experts, and I'll see, you know, see where I disagree. But I think they're absolutely wrong. I think they're absolutely wrong that you cannot allow,
well, we can,
because that would mean
we
any
can
president.
Wish and we can fantasize, but it doesn't change the facts.
It doesn't change
land.
The facts. No, I don't think so.
This at all.
No. Nope. Because this means that any election can be stolen, and once somebody's fraudulently put in, then you can't get rid of them. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, what is happening on the ground in many, many states is ensuring that it cannot happen again by legal measures that are being taken now that were not in place in November of 2020. That's what's happening on the ground.
Well, and even the measures that were put in, the supposedly COVID things, you know, those were illegal. You know, the fact that Facebook donated millions upon millions of dollars to boost Democrat districts, the fact that information was censored. I mean, there's so many things that were illegal about that election. You can't possibly validate it. You can't validate an election that was illegal in so many ways. And so I will see how this turns out. We're going to know more tomorrow. But I absolutely believe that this can be changed, that he can be removed simply because it was a coup. It was a
Who's
stolen
gonna
election.
Who's going to do that? Who
Supreme
with
Court?
Which constitutional authority is going to do that?
Well, it should go to Congress and the Supreme Court, but let's see what happens. You know, I'd be very curious. I don't know who's going to actually do it.
Nobody's going to do that. Nobody.
Okay, we disagree, which is
we
what makes it so interesting.
The 25th Amendment, which is highly unlikely. We have impeachment, which is also not very likely.
Well, it's not realistic.
And we
He's
have the
president.
Elections of the midterms coming up in 2022 to check the un, unchecked, currently unchecked power that the Democrats hold.
Well, the problem with 2022, and we went over this a little bit ago, you weren't here on the show, but I talked about the fact that the California recall is coming. There's massive fraud in that mail-in vote, and that's not, you know, there's a very good chance that Newsom was recalled, but because the fraud is still there.
Probably not. Probably not. It's California.
Well, that's true, too. You know, I mean, I understand, but
they
California
get what they
votes
deserve.
Well, they do, but that's why a lot of us have left. In fact, one of the things we talked about, what did enough people leave, you know, California like me, you know, to change the vote, all the people that would have voted for the recall? I don't know, and I can't prove it, but my gut suspicion is, you know, it's a lot closer than it was reported, but there's certainly... I mean,
it may have been a few points closer due to the fraud, but it wouldn't have changed the outcome.
But the fact that there is fraud, see, this is the point that where I differ with you, because the fact that it is fraud changes it. You don't, you don't have to have enough fraud to cancel the numbers. The fact that there's fraud at all. In other words, if you steal money from, get Jonathan, we need you back here. If you rob a bank and don't steal enough money for that bank to go out of business, have you committed robbery? Absolutely. If you steal votes, if you commit vote fraud, but not enough to overturn the election, should you lose anyway? Yes, you should, because you committed a crime. So it's not the...
Well, no, you should be indicted and prosecuted for the crime you committed, period.
Right. But you still...
But you don't overturn the election. You prosecute the crime that was committed.
So that doesn't make sense, though, because you're letting a fraudulent election stand. You're prosecuting people who committed election fraud, but letting the results of that election fraud stand. That doesn't make sense to
me. Yes. Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's where we disagree. Jonathan? Gene? Help us out here.
Well,
thanks, Claire. I appreciate that.
The one thing to me is that perhaps when the, you know, when the, and I don't know if you were starting to wind up to the idea that we're going to have trouble in 2022 because of continued voter fraud. And I do think that everybody's watching now, so I think that tends to outweigh that. But when the Republicans take over, I think in 2023, they might impeach Biden as being not validly elected.
No, see, that's where he should be arrested, not impeached. How do you impeach somebody that you know, if it's ruled that he never was president, you can't impeach him because he never was president. Impeachment is reserved for presidents.
Well, there's plenty of other cause to impeach Biden at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, articles of impeachment have already been submitted based on what he's done so far.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to look for anything further. Of course, by 2023, it could be a whole bunch more.
Well, like I say, one is sufficient for me. I mean, the mere fact that he took the office is impeachable, as far as I'm concerned. I've got a few more things, and like I say, we're not restricted on time. We can go a little bit longer, and then when we're done with our discussion, I'll play our Santa Rosa Volunteers thing. Gene, do you have anything you want to jump in on here? And Claire, once again, thank you for that discussion. I really appreciate when we can disagree on stuff and just argue both sides of it and let people, you know, see for themselves what they think. So that was wonderful. Gene?
No, I don't have anything to add. It's all very interesting. Yeah,
okay.
I got to hope, though, that with Arizona – what's happening tomorrow, that it's just the beginning of many other things to happen. And, Biden and his corrupt administration will be gone soon.
Yeah. Yeah, and we may or may not get into my topic that I started the show with. I might pick it up tomorrow, but that's okay. There's something I found. There was a report on One American News last night talking about DARPA and talking about this, what do they call it? Defense dissolve or disinformation or something or other. I've forgotten the exact name. I've got it in my notes here, which are probably my other page. But there's an organization within the military that was working with the Democrats that was doing a psychological operation against Americans. And Washington Post started this out. The article that I've got here is from J. Michael Waller, who was the person who was interviewed last night. The article is a year old, September 15th, 2020, talks about Biden's private army and the militarization of American politics. Claire, do you know anything about this, about DARPA and the psychological operations? I can read
no,
the article.
No, I really don't. And I didn't really pay attention to that article much.
Well, that's okay, because I only gave it to you a little bit ago. But it says, the deployment of military psychological warfare technology to defeat President Trump has taken on added meaning since the Washington Post reported it last May. This would be in 2020. Now, prominent counterinsurgency practitioners from the global war on terror are calling on the American military leadership to overthrow the president if the results of the upcoming election are inconclusive or in dispute. Of course, this is before November 3rd, you know, the election that happened then. It says, for months, the Biden camp has been using militarized rhetoric to suggest that President Trump is bent on electoral fraud and subverting the Constitution to keep himself in power. See, I think they did exactly the opposite. I think it's a projection. In other words, they're accusing Trump of what they were doing. And where it talks about this, let's see if I can find this part where it talks about DARPA. It says, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, developed the psychological warfare technology for use against terrorists. Former DARPA consultant Curtis Hoagland started Defeat Disinfo. That's the organization, Defeat Disinfo, as a political action committee. He adapted an unclassified open source version of the DARPA technology to blame Trump for the pandemic from China and accused of pushing policies that kill American citizens. Because people are dying as a result of his political agenda. We heard that before, too. Claire, do you know anything about this at all? Because this is like a whole topic
well,
I research.
Not really, but what you're describing is illegal. Under United States law, you know, U.S. government entities, DARPA or anybody else, are forbidden from projecting disinformation and propaganda against the American people themselves. Overseas, that's a whole other story. Against our adversaries and enemies. But they are not permitted to do that under U.S. law domestically here at home. That's illegal.
And the question is, did they? It says here, this
don't
is Jay Waller. Yeah, this is what his name again. J. Michael Waller. Well, I always see him again on the show. You never know. He says, as a psychological operations PSYOP specialist, I'm personally familiar with versions of this technology used by the U.S. Special Operations Command. It was designed not only for PSYOP messaging, but for physically locating individuals in real time. It performs both functions by tracking individuals' phones and other mobile devices, da-da-da-da. It says, applied one way, the technology scoops up and aggregates messages to determine who is initiating or responding to certain themes. We heard that Trump was being spied on. You know, he said that himself. Was that done with this, you know, is this an Obama operation used against, you know, Trump? And why is this popping up in the news again? You know, I'm wondering, Jonathan, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about the foundation of all of that. No. Hmm.
Jonathan? I know he's there somewhere. Well, that's okay.
I think Michael Waller, if I remember, is I actually knew him in the University of Florida. It's the same person.
Oh.
Let me double check.
J. Michael Waller, Center for
Security Policy.
Policy. Yeah.
Yeah, the shop.
Yeah, I don't think. But
he
wasn't always there.
Muslims.
Wait, Claire, what did you say? That sounds
cool. I said I was with them for 10 years. They kicked me out last year because they wanted to work more closely with Muslims.
Oh, that's a whole story. If you want to tell that one sometime. That's fascinating. Yeah. Interesting.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So that turns
right.
Credibility.
I didn't think that was
down.
A very good idea.
Well, no.
Yeah.
You know, I think if Americans knew it, they wouldn't think it's a very good idea either. I'm glad you left. Jonathan?
But the thing is I think the science of manipulating people, of course, goes on back a long way to the Soviet Revolution, to the Nazi Third Reich and Goebbels and everything. And they, you know, while they claimed that everything was scientific, the one thing that was scientific about them is this. I think. Well, I mean, I don't know what to think, because if the military is studying these things, they sure are horrible at it in other countries. They're spectacular failure, whereas the Democrat Party and the left are masters of deception. So these are things we should be concerned about, but I don't know where it comes from.
See, that's really interesting that we're amazingly, incompetent at what's going on around the world. And I tend to think everything's purposeful. You know, I looked at that first. I mean, I'm sure there are cases where they are generally incompetent. But it seems to me it's easier to explain by design than it is by accident. But yet, here at home, they're so good at it. And in fact, they're employing all the, Claire, do you remember a program called Echelon This is back in the Patriot Act when it first came out. Okay, so there were things that were developed to supposedly go after terrorists that the government then used against Americans. So my question is, do they say they're developing it for terrorists, you know, and maybe use it against terrorists, which is a good thing, you know, but they're secretly they really want to use it against Americans, but they're saying they're using it for terrorists.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that during the Trump before and during the Trump administration, you know, our national security agencies went rogue, and that means a bunch of them went rogue and used tools against Trump, his campaign, the people around him that were never intended to be used against American citizens.
So this is what makes the November election so complicated, because you've got everything from voting machines to, you know, recycled ballots to fraud mail-in to psychological operations to spying by our own government, you know, to, you know, the list goes, you know, to censorship by big tech. I mean, this is an amazingly dark time that we're in now because of all these things. And I have trouble keeping track of all of them just because they're so overwhelming, the amount of things that are against us. And yet, Trump was able to do, you know, such amazing things with the Abraham Accords, with getting NATO to pay their bills, you know, tariffs on China, you know, keeping us from a war with North Korea that I think Hillary probably would have, you know, maybe would have started. I don't know. I don't trust her. But just the ability to do the things that he did with all this opposition going on, you know, you can only think of how much he could have done without all that opposition. If he just had a normal presidency with normal criticism and normal press reporting and things like that. Anybody want that one?
Oh, agreed. I mean, just absolutely agreed.
Okay.
Well,
something
radically changed on the left between, and I don't know if they just decided that if they charged the zone with everything they could, but you know, somehow things that were covert for decades, you know, suddenly they just gone deliberate. Maybe they figured they were.
Oh, see, now you're fading out just a bit, Jonathan. Your line was so good before. Wherever you were standing, go back. I think he's outside somewhere. Jonathan, we've lost
you. Phone muted itself.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, my
Can
phone
start again,
muted
please?
Itself, but just decided it didn't like what I was saying. I guess that's probably
the answer. I didn't know it was the phone. So let's welcome the FBI and the NSA to our
conversation. No, my phone does things by itself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You sure?
No, my phone just decides to do things. And, all right. Or it's being remotely, you know, who knows what. So,
yeah.
So I was saying I don't know what I was saying. At some point the left just decided to stop being covert. They were doing all these things, but they were, you know, doing it to avoid detection. Then they just suddenly decided on across the board just to go, you know, totally all out. And not maybe they figured the American people are such sheep they won't respond, or that if they do everything at once we can't stop everything. I don't know what.
That's a great point, Claire. What do you think?
No, yeah, I absolutely agree. There was a tipping point when they simply you know, shrugged off all attempts to be discreet or to evade detection, and just said the heck with it. We already own everything. We control everything. We have the power. Let's just show it. Yeah, absolutely. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's no opposition to this. I've talked about the GOP being the gelding old party. That they're, you know, and Claire, you first, you know, put me onto this with the controlled opposition. You know, is there any viable? And this is a lot of the basis for Action Radio. I think we can be the opposition, but it's going to take a while to develop this, obviously. But, you know, we're making some inroads. We may have our first bill passed here in our county here fairly soon to create an illegal alien free zone, which might be very interesting. It's an opposite of the sanctuary cities. But there's no opposition from the deep state. You know, I'm thinking about in the Sidney Powell article how Mike Pence, you know, made it possible for Biden to be there simply because they didn't challenge or didn't allow the challenge to go forward on the Electoral Counting Act. I can drag out the article. I don't remember the exact details. But, you know, Pence is as much responsible for Biden as anybody.
Yeah, so weak. So weak.
So we got a failure.
He has decided on retirement at this point. From
I think he's running again.
Oh, dear.
You know, but yeah, but he's not going to get anywhere because Trump, you know, voters hate him. So you get the strange thing. Well, let me talk about what I sort of had an idea for the show today, but I didn't think we'd have enough time. I want to just kind of introduce it. I'm calling it, the title of the show today, President Nobody and the Great American Replacement. And it seems to me we should, and this is, you're not going to find articles on this. This is just us kind of talking here. So there's no real story. Oh, and looks like I got Pianki on the line too. I'll get to him in just a second. But the idea, if you combine an open border, you know, where millions of people are flocking in here, you've got the Afghanis who were brought in. 100,000 Afghanis came, you know, and Americans are still there. That's not an accident. Somalis came here. Hondurans from an earthquake, you know, were supposed to go back after so much time. Haitians from problems they had were supposed to go back after so much time. You know, it seems to me that Americans are being replaced, you know, whatever right here, independent and free Americans are being replaced by compliant peasants. You've got a system here. You know, if you take into account abortion, which without abortion, our black population would be double what it is today. You know, you've got Americans are being encouraged to, you know, not live, to go away and die or be restricted, you know, or take the vaccine, which I think has horrible health consequences, more and more that are coming out. And we are being replaced. We're being replaced in education. You know, it's become indoctrination. I got a bunch of things that I put, you know, on a list here. But basically, there's, you know, if you look at the overall program, there's a replacement of Americans with, you know, a peasant class. And I want to ask Claire, I mean, like I say, I know you haven't had a chance to think about it, and we can talk more about it next week. But what happens to nations? You know, is there an example you can think of? I know when the refugees came out of, I think, Syria and other places, and they went to Sweden, caused huge problems with them. You know, do you think there's either by accident or on purpose, a replacement program where patriotic individual, you know, mom apple pie and flag waving Americans are being replaced with a peasant class that's much more easily controlled?
Yeah. Now, I am going to have to jump here in
okay.
a moment or two, but
that's fine.
It's a very absolutely definitely deliberate policy of diluting the original. Population of the United States, or even the population that existed 50 years ago, not
mm-hmm.
original, but the population we had as of, let's say, 50 years ago, to totally replace that, or at least dilute that so much that
mm-hmm.
the original character, the Judeo-Christian-based constitutional principles of the country would be so diluted and so diminished, so degraded that we would just cease to be the constitutional republic founded by the founding fathers, you know, way back in 1776. I think that very much, very definitely is the objective. I've said this on other radio programs recently, but the crew that surrounds the White House right now, which includes a lot of people who are retreads from the Obama administrations, you have to understand that they come to office with a world view, a Weltanschauung, that says America is a force for ill in the world. And they believe it their moral duty to do anything possible to diminish America, to degrade America, to tear America down so that we are just one more entity among 194 other countries in the world, and we're all just one globalist soup. That is what they believe is their moral obligation. And once you realize that that's what they're about, you understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said.
So,
makes perfect sense.
I do have
Jonathan?
To jump. But
okay.
To be
well,
continued,
you,
huh?
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we're just getting started.
Thank you all.
As always.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Claire.
Until
next week. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, goodbye now. Jonathan, you want to pick up on that? And then I'm going to make Pianki's line live. Your phone's muting itself again.
Am
Take
I
two.
Here?
Yeah, you're here, but I want to get Jonathan to finish this point because his line was muting a bit. Jonathan, you want to try one more time or Pianki to go ahead?
I think he's been captured.
Yeah, well, he's live. He's just not... I think we lost. That's Gene's line. Okay, so there we go. All right, I'm writing names in here. So, Pianki, why don't you go ahead? Welcome to the show again.
Well, what Claire said is what I've been talking about for a while. And at some point in time, when things are happening, you stop and begin to pay attention, you begin to correlate what you're witnessing with what you have seen in the past, read in the past, heard in the past. And that is true, that the fabric of the United States has been under attack for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to our third hour for the first time.
Yeah. So what she said is true. You can look at the different angles that's being applied, angles it's coming from, and what it's directed at. And most recently is with the schools. Now, the schools has been going on for quite some time. But now you're starting to see things come out with subjects like critical race theory and mask. And now they wanted to vaccinate your children against your will, the parent. So, yes, this has been going on. And Obama, I say, it smells like him.
Sure does. Well, and this is what, you know, as Claire talked about, the team, the squad, the group, the folks that are doing this, you know, behind the scenes, you know, President Nobody and the Great American Replacement. And so this is not so much a title as a prelude to what we really need to talk about. But education is one of the items I've identified. I might write an article on this, actually. But so when you think about, you know, education used to be education. You used to learn things, you know, history, math, science, English, literature. You know, you learn stuff. And now it's an indoctrination. You learn about, you know, what race you are and whether you're a victim or an oppressor. You know, you learn about, you know, why everybody else is a victim in the real world, and you learn how evil your country is. And you're indoctrinated with things that can't possibly help you in the real world. They can't make you educated. You know, it's you know, uncritical thinking skills. So it's the ability to not have the critical skills necessary for thinking. And by the way, most people don't realize this. Critical thinking skills does not mean you get the skills to think critically. It means the skills to be critical of everything, okay? So it's code, okay? This is Marxist education code. So when they talk about critical thinking, they want to teach kids how to be, you know, critical of everything, of God, of church, of state, of patriotism, of the flag, of any institution, you know, or corporation or you know, profit itself or, you know, it doesn't matter what. They want you to be critical, because once you criticize everything, you can run it down. You can dismiss it. You can, you know, then oppress it. And so when we talked about the Judeo-Christian ethic, you know, that is, you know, white supremacy to these people is white European Judeo-Christian thought, ideology, you know, God, you know, gives you your rights at your birth. That's what white supremacism really is to these people. They don't say it. They hide it behind racism. But the real white supremacy, the real supremacy that they're talking about, is the supremacy of the individual and individual rights given by God that government is duty-bound to protect. And they want just the opposite. They dismiss God, want the control, and they hide it behind racism. But there is no, you know, the white supremacy is not a racist issue. It's an ideological one. And once you understand that, everything
else
makes sense.
Well, I don't think it's either.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's either. White supremacy, when you look at the substance of it, what it is, it's simply about doing business. Mm-hmm. When you look at some of the major industries and major categories of business, uh-huh, and you look at who's the major players in those, they are white, but that changes back and forth. At one time, it may be offshore oil well drilling. At one point, Nigeria controlled about 18-20% of the world offshore oil well drilling.
Yeah, remember what happened with
and
that?
These things,
they used to be OPEC.
It goes back. It goes back and forth. Okay. Look at the garment industry in New York, Manhattan. Jews do not control that. White Jews do not control that. At one point, it switched over to the Asians. Look at the Asians when it comes down to textiles. Look at it when it comes down to electronics. So it goes back and forth. And the way to compete against white supremacy, or Nigerian supremacy, or Asian supremacy, is to compete against it.
Yeah.
The way, if you don't like it.
Yeah, interesting. We had something that just happened here locally. You know, we talk about violence on the left. We've got a headline here in our South Santa Rosa News. Milton United co-founder faces arrest for street fight. We've got Summer Merricks and with her husband Chris representing Milton United, a youth organization aimed to promote racial unity at the May 2, 2021 unveiling of the City of Milton's Cube Project. This is a Black Lives Matter project. City of Milton, and we've got the photo there. Milton Police Department confirms the judge has signed a warrant for the arrest. So these folks come here, professing to bring racial unity, and they end up fighting. They wanted to put our, Black Lives Matter big emblem on our streets. It's like, no, go away. You want to make an art project? That's different, but don't paint our public streets. But it's just interesting that you think it can't happen in your community, and then it does. So we've got some problems going on right here. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Which somebody said earlier about the attack on black conservatives. He absolutely mm-hmm. right. If yep. you ever have black conservatives rise up and be a force to be reckoned with, rather than being mm-hmm. in the shadows because of a fear of ridicule and reprisals, now you really got something going on.
Yeah. I wonder if Dr. Ladapo is the first black Surgeon General for the state of Florida. I mean, and no one ever said that. I mean, it may not be, but it'd be interesting. But if he were a liberal, and that were the case, that's the first thing you'd hear. The first black,
Now you're starting to think.
I'm working on it.
Another one out there is
you're good
the
influence
lieutenant.
Or bad influence. Good or bad influence. And Jonathan's back on the line too. Jonathan, you're live as well, so feel free to.
Wait a minute. Another one out there is the lieutenant governor of West Virginia. Is it? Have you heard him?
Oh, you're talking about Robinson?
Yeah, I think so. He's kind of
okay. That's South Carolina
guy.
Or North Carolina.
He's with the NRA.
Yeah, he gets up and says, his speech is classic. I've watched it, a bunch of times. He says, you people always blame us. You say it's, I said, I'm an American. I own a gun. I'm not the problem. You put this on us, and you're really, it's the criminals that are causing the problem. He made this incredible speech. I think he's in the lieutenant governorship because of that speech. So he ran for a lieutenant governor. He won. Yeah, and this is the perfect example of a regular citizen. This is happening all over the country. This is a great phenomenon we should talk about sometime too. But regular citizens are, because of social media, we're actually using it to our advantage. Regular citizens in school boards, regular citizens in city council meetings and county commissioner meetings are making hugely wonderful speeches, and they're able to run for office because people go, oh, I like that guy, or that woman's cool, So they're taking people that otherwise might not have access, but because of social media, now all of a sudden they're bypassing the parties. They're bypassing the money, the donors, the people that require certain things of you. It's like the people in Congress, they only get money if they conform, right? Which defeats the purpose of an individual representative. But these folks like Robinson and Boebert in Colorado and, Marjorie Taylor Greene, these people are coming forward and, I forgot who's the gentleman with the eye patch there, the combat veteran. I've forgotten his name anyway. But these people are coming forward now, and they're running, and they're winning. And a lot of it has to do with social media and one speech, and this guy's lieutenant governor. It's fabulous.
Well, he's speaking on the thing that gets to the heart of those who know what is being said, and that is a major problem. You don't have as many today that knows what's being said as you did, for instance, during the World War II era.
Well, it's interesting. And you and I remember a time, and I'm not sure how old Jonathan is or Gene exactly, and you guys don't have to tell us, but there was a time when there were three networks, and they were all liberal hosts, and NBC, CBS, and ABC, the American Broadcasting Corporation, the National Broadcasting Corporation, and the Columbia Broadcasting Corporation, or whatever it was. And they had Walter Cronkite and Chet Huntley and David Brinkley, and I've forgotten, and I think John Chancellor. I think those were the big three, back in the 60s. And that was the news. That was all the news. That was it. Or you had the major newspapers, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post. That was the news. It all came out of the Northeast. And the sources were so limited. But now they're trying to censor everybody else because there's so many other sources of news. There's so many other broadcasters. Me, I'm doing things I could never hope to do 50 years ago because there wasn't the technology to do it. I'd have to get a job at a major corporation and major media and work up from some podunk little town and go from there. Fascinating what's happening.
Well, you got to look and see, and I can comment on Black America.
Mm-hmm.
Black, you have certain classes of Black that have taken ownership of Black America, and they try to as much as they can. You take the NBA or the National Football League. The demand is for Black coaches, Black trainers, Black managers, black head staffs. So that there, in a sense, if whites were to say it, would be racist. Now, I don't have no problem with people that's qualified to do things, but mm-hmm. it's the pretense behind it. And then when you look at your school systems, there is a grip on the public schools in the urban areas
mm-hmm.
because it's a moneymaker
mm-hmm.
without any accountability. In other words, if it was Ford Motor Company putting out a yeah. product, it would be a terrible product.
So how many teachers are in liberal school districts, you know, or cities run by black Democrats who are black school teachers simply because they're black? I mean, has anybody taken a look at that, you know, regardless of competence or incompetence?
Well, they try to get black males because black females, the males – students don't pay too much attention to them, so they're trying to get black males. But black male teachers get paid more for going and teaching in white school districts.
Oh, that's interesting.
Black PhDs, especially those that's carrying some research with them,
uh-huh.
they don't go to historical black colleges. They go to the white colleges. For a lot of reasons. One reason, if I'm not blaming the students, but if you're a college professor in a historical black college,
mm-hmm.
especially those down at the bottom of the list where you got 17% graduation rate,
right?
The teacher with a very, you know, strong degree, they don't want to teach there because you never have opportunity to go to the upper extremes of your ability and apply that challenge to the students because they can't deal with it.
I'm wondering if black colleges aren't obsolete because the original reason was because so many schools wouldn't accept black students, you know, when black colleges first came about. And we're talking, you know, Reconstruction through the Civil Rights Act, you know, so it made sense to have black colleges because, you know, like I say, if black students were banned from white colleges, you know, this is a wonderful thing to do to give, you know, folks access. But nowadays, just the opposite is the case. You've got black students with lower SAT requirements, lower grade point averages, you know, and greater access to scholarships than white students and Asian students, certainly, and even 19 students, which is kind of interesting, that are being allowed to go to colleges. You know, is there a need or a role for traditionally black colleges in America today?
Well, believe it or not, blacks are starting not to send their children to them. They're going to the traditional white college.
Yeah,
it's gotten so that they even have in the spring, in mm-hmm. many school districts have these organized tours where they take students out of these school districts, out of high schools, and probably starting at the 11th grade, and take tours of black historical college, trying to persuade them to come to their college because their attendance is dropping.
Well, why don't they just open up to other students? I mean, it may have started as a traditionally black college, but it doesn't have to stay that way. We had a lot of schools. In fact, I know someone that went to, I think it was Connecticut College, which was an all-female college, and they were losing students. So they opened up the guys. So the first class of guys, apparently we were very busy. There was like 10 guys and, you know, what, 2,000 women. Women are interesting. I would have gone to that school just for the fun.
Well, they are. You see more in some of these arenas, you see a large number of white students attending these schools. I tell you what you're starting to see in the sports, like baseball. Mm-hmm. On your historical black colleges, on the baseball team, a lot of those players are white.
Well, that's interesting. See, this actually –
football
and
basketball
is
the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, you know, swim teams too. I mean, how many black athletes are on swim teams? Not a lot. You know, how many white guys are playing on football teams? Not a lot. You know, and I don't know why. It just it seems to be the way it's working out, or for whatever physiological differences there might be. But the thing is, you know, are there even white colleges anymore? You look at the racial makeup of traditionally white colleges. When you say white college, do you mean white, you know, run by white managers, or do you mean a white student body when you talk about a white college?
Well, it's probably a white student body.
Okay.
And there isn't a move now to try to prevent outstanding athletes coming out of black urban high schools to go to black colleges rather than going to whites.
You know, it really comes down to choice. As much as people try to engineer society, the best way is still just to let people go where they want to go. And if you've got a better product, same thing with schools. This is why school choice works. You know, if the government schools are better, then send your kid to the government school with your voucher. If a private school is better,
well, yeah, absolutely,
most cases it will be. You know, but this is the answer. But the more they try to engineer this stuff, it's like when government planners try to come up with a solution for everybody, it doesn't work. The best solution is to have people make individual decisions for themselves. Let me ask Jean if she wants to jump in here, because I've got a topic I think you might find interesting as we continue on our extended show today, which is kind of cool. Do you like the idea of 3 hours, Bianchi? What do you think? Isn't this fun?
I can hang.
All right, good. Well, we're going to start earlier. This week will be 7 to 10, and that'll be actually tomorrow. But Monday we're going to start an hour earlier, so it'll be 6 to 9 Central Time, 7 to 10 Eastern. Yeah.
On this subject, okay, too, and not to be cutting off from Jean's time, but I think Jean likes to hear us talk because she's learning things that she never heard before.
Well,
but,
we'll ask
her
about that, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way you learn. Listen, mm-hmm. and in different cultures, the children listen. But not calling you a child, Jean, but,
his Jean has a lot to offer. When Jean gets on a roll, Jean has a lot of wonderful things to say. So, Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Even when you have black professionals with skills like STEM field, you would hear people representing some groups that say that those black students, graduates, shouldn't go to work for white corporations because, here we go again, it's furthering white supremacy.
What's a white corporation? What, Google? So
a white corporation
firms,
would be Caterpillar, white Boeing, General Dynamics, Lockheed, CIA, FBI, National Society of Black Engineers. Their students are surveyed as which is they consider a top corporation that employ them. They employ a lot of blacks, which is good because these kids are qualified. And it's called the most preferred employers. In this one article, it says Google leads NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers, most preferred employers. And you look at, for 2017, the top 50, you had from 49 and 50 was Caterpillar and Federal Bureau of Investigation, while 1, 2, and 3 was Google, Apple, and Boeing. 4 is GE. 5 is NASA.
Those are big companies with big salaries. That makes sense to work at those companies, but they're not white companies.
Well, Greg, I'm just telling you what I hear.
No, I understand, and I'm not criticizing you, but I think this perception.
I had this said about my grandson, too.
With what?
He said your grandson should go to work for a black company.
Oh, like what, Black Rifle Coffee? That'd be a good one. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
But here's what I don't understand, though. There's still a lot of white people in this country, and there's a lot of white people with, extended families and long traditions and family businesses that have become huge corporations. And so the idea of working for a white company as opposed to a black company, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't register with me.
I tell you what, the company
has a policy. Yeah, go ahead.
You talk about this Surgeon General in Nigeria. He comes out of a Nigerian family. He came here when he was five.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. At one point in time, and of course it changes, 40% of the black male student body at Harvard was Nigerian, either Nigerian or African. It was not native black American. See, that has to be detailed. There's native blacks. Then there's blacks that come from abroad one way or the other.
Well, you said yesterday that the African blacks don't think of themselves as black. They think, country or the whatever, ancestry they have. That's who they are. Black.
This guy's name tell you who he is. He's Nigerian. He's from the ethnic group called the Yoruba.
Uh-huh.
Those in the know can look at a person's name and tell you where they come from.
Yeah.
So that's – now, at Cornell University, you had the black student body was complaining with the administration that they were
too many
Nigerians, too many Africans. Too many Africans.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's funny that black Americans were complaining there were too many black Africans in the school.
It's a newspaper article on it. Yes,
oh,
it is. And
posted in the group. That's outrageous.
Yeah. Well, I have. You guys just didn't pay too much attention to it.
What? Do we miss
it?
Yes,
these
things. Hey, okay.
Hmm?
Highlight it. Say, hey, Greg, look what I found. Feel free. That's hysterical. Well, this too, you know, the other thing was just like the Asians, especially in California, who complained that there weren't enough Asian students, you know, in the schools when they were below the quota, you know, or whatever. So they established a quota. So then
students, see, they can't do this in public universities, you know, right. Your LSUs and so forth. But in your private universities, like your Harvard and your Yales,
mm-hmm.
they will spot a black student 310 points on the SAT.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about that.
The Asian, they would deduct them 140 points. Now, that's an article I read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fascinating to me, you know, because you would think that college admission should be blind, you know, and tests should be done by number, and no one knows exactly who the person is. That's the only fair way to do it.
In California, they want to make adjustments in the scoring based on the neighborhoods you come out of. And I think in Oregon, they want to do away with multiplication, saying it's racist or something like that.
Hey, listen, I should have been spotted 200 points for being an immigrant. You know, I didn't have a history in this tree. I didn't go to school here, you know, until junior high. You know, when I took the SATs, I've been in this country, I think, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it was, not very long. So I'm expected to compete with Americans who have grown up here? I mean, that's unfair.
Now,
and yet I still did fairly well.
Too.
And I did fairly well. How about that? How did that happen?
This Surgeon General from Florida, I'm willing to bet you his wife is white. That there
That's
is also a
conversation. Interesting. That is. Now, why
I'm
do you think
willing
so?
To bet you.
Why? Why is that?
Because for him to take on the type of study, coursework, and so on and so on, I know it's heavily demanded in
mm-hmm.
Nigerian families.
Well,
probably others too. One thing they got is say, make us proud. When they say that, they're talking about you make the family proud.
Right.
So I'm willing to bet you that he came up in an atmosphere, an environment where that's what he was acclimated to. You know, another thing, too, when you have some star athletes coming out of high school and they go to white colleges,
mm-hmm.
the coaches go out of their way to place that athlete with a white female. Why is that? Because
so
they say the white female – as far as dating.
Wait. You're talking about arranged dating?
Well, listen to what I got to say. Listen to what I got to say. You got
okay.
to listen to all of them.
Okay.
They go out of their way, and there was a radio host in St. Louis. His name was Onion Harden. He would talk about this.
Okay.
And when you look at it, you can see some patterns. Why is that? Because white females was more likely to use contraceptives. And if that girl got pregnant, it would be no burden over this athlete's head that would affect their performance.
Wait. Why would it be less of a burden with a white student getting pregnant over a black woman? I don't understand.
You don't hardly see that. You don't hardly see white male students and black females. You don't hardly see Asians with black females. You start to see, matter of fact, I think the ratio now may be 30%. 30% of black males with advanced degrees marry white women.
Oh, that's
now that there's a problem with certain groups in the community.
So who are the black women dating then? If they're not dating black men, and you know, black men are dating white guys won't grow with black
it's
women.
It's not that they're not dating black males, which they do, but. That's the difference in the culture in black society. Black society is not just one culture.
Right.
Those that you call – see, this is where the complication come in. You want to call mm-hmm. a person like a Nigerian black. Well, they don't identify mm-hmm. as black. Okay? That's a different culture. Jamaicans mm-hmm. in Jamaica,
no,
Queens
Jamaica
is
too,
a different culture.
I've known Jamaicans, and they don't want to –
Blacks
like,
in
black.
America.
I'm, you know, yeah.
Yeah, blacks in America don't have just no one culture. They have several cultures that you can identify if you're around them. You know, you come down south, the people are different in many aspects than the blacks up north.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I always remember San Francisco. The beauty about it was everybody's a minority. So everybody dated everybody else. You'd have, you know, Italians and Samoans. I mean, you have ridiculous combinations. I saw, you know, black and Asian and white and Hispanic people mixing, dating all the time. You know, maybe that was just the Bay Area. And I don't know what the situation is like now, because I think ever since Obama, we've been isolating. It's sort of like an enforced, you know, people are getting back into segregating themselves. In other words, they're measuring themselves more with their race. But there was a time in the 80s. You know, and maybe early 90s when nobody gave a damn about the, you know, it was, in fact, it was fashionable for a white guy to have an Asian girlfriend. And that was to say, you haven't made it in the Bay Area until you've had an Asian girlfriend.
Well, that's what they used to say about black males. It's fashionable for you to have a white female on your arm.
Okay. Well, why wouldn't it be fashionable for a white guy to have a black girlfriend?
Have you ever heard of the term, Gene, get in here. Have you ever heard the term married up?
I think Jean had to leave. You know, she's it was. I kind of surprised her last night. I said, "Hey, we're gonna go 3 hours tomorrow." Like, oh, it's just you and me. She'll be back.
Yeah.
She'll
have you ever heard the term of marrying up?
I've heard of it, but I'm not sure exactly. That's not a term I use.
It exists. A Carnegie, a Rockefeller is not going to go to the urban area to find a wife.
Yeah, but I mean, see, this goes to the whole discrimination thing. That assumes that all black women are you know, living in poverty, and of course, that's insane. You know,
Look at Serena Williams.
Okay,
who did she marry?
She married a white guy.
Yes.
Oh. Well, interesting. The people that the celebrities I've known. I remember I used to be friends with Ken Hamblin, who was the Black Avenger, because he, you know, my book came out, and he had me. You know, this is back in the 90s. And so we talked about that too. His wife was white. I think most of the black football players have white wives. I mean, a huge proportion.
Yes. Well, that goes back to who they was placed with when they came on the campus.
See, I don't know. How do you get placed? How do the coaches place them? What do they do? See, I want to introduce you to Susie Cheerleader. You know, Mr. Jefferson. I mean,
you know, Greg,
I'm so naive.
You're the new kid on it. Yeah, you're naive. You're very naive.
It's all right. I don't care.
It's all right.
I mean, it's socially
part
from,
of your
to
education.
Largest, well, no, and actually, you know, a lot of those things, you know, I'll tell you about, you know, my emotional upbringing. I'll tell you about, you know, some of the various issues and stuff. Someday we'll go into that. But, yeah, there's a lot of things I'm naive about. And that's okay. I don't mind.
I'll tell you what. In Africa, you got groups that don't like each other.
And they're both black. What a surprise.
Yeah, now he's – well, absolutely. The doctor is a Yoruba.
Okay.
Yoruba women usually don't marry anything but Yoruba. Now, of course, you always got these exceptions. But they don't marry Igbo. They don't marry the Hausa. They don't marry African-American, black Americans. They marry Igbo.
Interesting.
And I'm sorry. They marry Yoruba. Igbo, which is there in Lagos. That's their area in Lagos. The same thing in Ghana, Ashanti, and Ewe. Our wife is Ewe. They don't get along too well. You ought to hear what she say about Nigerians.
Put her on the show. I'd love to have your wife on the show. I think it's going to be fascinating.
No, I ain't
going to
do that. But,
why not? Come on, let's ask her.
That's human nature.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
So what you see going on here in the United States is a compilation of a lot of things. And it's all starting to reach its apex. Now, if it get to the apex, will it come sliding back down? I think it will. But it takes work in order to make that happen. It's like you're seeing more parents showing up at school board meetings. You're seeing more people speaking out against critical race theory. You see more blacks saying BLM don't represent them. So, but is it enough? See, for them to get the foothold that they have shows you that there was a weakness that was detected. And the weakness that was detected has been worked on for quite some time.
Interesting. Yeah, there's there's two opposing forces in this country right now. It's fascinating. There are those that want to control and those that are want to rebel. And it's interesting. I think rebellion is going to win ultimately. I think it has to. I think the people that the more control they go for, the less they're actually going to end up having, which is good, which is a good thing. And we'll see how that goes.
See, if you ask your squad, what is it that you want?
Yeah.
It's usually, some of it is even detrimental to certain aspects of the black community that they happen to have been elected to. See, a lot of them got elected because of the BLM movement that put into these people's heads. Y'all need to get registered so you can vote. Well, they did do that. And guess who they voted for? The person that was on the loudspeaker who was speaking at the BLM rallies, and they voted for them, like, for instance, in St. Louis, Cori Bush.
She's terrible. She's horrible. I remember she was standing on the Capitol steps saying, if people are homeless, I'm going to be homeless too, and I'm going to sleep on the steps, or whatever that stupid campaign was. But she's dangerous.
Absolutely right. And let me tell you how that correlates. She also is against defense spending.
Mm-hmm.
In her area is Boeing Aircraft. Well, that's a defense contractor. And guess who they hire? They hire a lot of black STEM graduates.
Yeah.
Didn't I tell you that Bowen was number 5 on the list?
Mm-hmm,
number 3 on here, the list is right here. Bowen.
Yeah, I think it was 3.
Is number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Bowen, this is a black organization that's been around since 1970 that came about to try to get more black students into sciences.
Hmm.
Now they call it STEM. Now it has evolved into STEAM, which includes art, which should be 3D printed. Now, here she is trying to make it rough for their third most preferred employer.
Yeah.
Now, what did that tell you?
Well, what it tells me is that black leaders, you know, leftist leaders, Marxist leaders who want control of the black population do not want the black population in this country to succeed. Because dependency is what keeps these people in power. And the minute, as more and more, black Americans become independent of the plantation, the less power these people are going to have. And it has to go that way. And it's happening more and more. I got an email from Herschel Walker's campaign. I'm not sure how they got my email. My email address is now public, greg@writeyourlaws.com. So I'm getting all the junk mail on that one. But, I'm going to write back and say, hey, Herschel Walker's campaign, come on the show. Let's talk. We'll see what happens.
Well, you're absolutely right. And these young people, these graduates hail from families that don't buy into that. I'm sorry, they just don't. Can you imagine a STEM graduate, an engineer, a chemist for a company out in front of a group of people that's riding? Well, if you do it right, just as the whites that was at the Charleston rally, some of their employers terminated them. So what are you going to do if you see a black employee of yours that's at one of these events? You're going to have to terminate them, to be fair, right?
You are, but the problem is, your time is your time. The whole point of having a First Amendment, I agree with the fact that people should not be screaming and yelling at their job, their First Amendment thing. It's a job. You're being paid to do a job, and you still have access to your First Amendment outside. But I don't believe that the job, I don't believe in them firing people for their political beliefs, as long as they're not brought into the company. But if they're going to fire white employees for doing that, they have to fire black employees for doing the same thing. That's just basic, equal protection.
Now, what happens when they fire a black employee?
Oh, no, they're racist. They get a lawsuit. The black warriors descend in. Black Zorro, shows up and says, hey, you can't do that. Yeah, that's interesting.
In 2018, Boeing moved down to number 5. Yeah, Google, Apple, NASA, Amazon, and then Boeing. 2017, Boeing was number 3. So
Well, they had the 737 MAX problem. They had airplane problems. We haven't even talked about the airplane stuff yet.
Well, yeah, but this list is top employers repeat. This is the top 50 employees I'm sorry, employers, mm-hmm. that black STEM graduates list
yeah.
as their preferred to work for.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, you know, we're going to have to start getting away from, you know, skin color employment because, you know, no person's going to, you know, no black engineer is going to give up being an engineer, you know, because they have to support their skin color. You know, it's just even though black leaders who want dependence would want them to, dependency would want them to do that. You know, that because that would just
well,
be
that's insane, but... that's going to be a ways off because when you look at the number of black engineers compared to the total, I think they're about like 4%. They're not even near their percentage in the population. So they got a long ways to go. Now, what holds that up?
No, no.
Let's talk about Cori Bush, who represent Normandy School District.
Mm-hmm.
The proficiency in math for that high school, those that are proficient, numbers 5% of the total class.
Wow. Well, that's de-education. That's taking potentially very bright students and making them stupid. I mean, that's the point of most urban education is to take black students and make them stupid so they'll be dependent. I mean, I hate to say it in those stark terms, but that's what's going on because you've got other schools that are trying to educate. You've got government schools that indoctrinate. You've got the private schools where the elite go, including, you know, black Obama. His kids did not go to the government schools. So the elites go to the private schools. You know, the white schools, I guess, have more money, they say, and the black schools are meant to create dependency. I mean, that's the way it looks.
Well, you're right. They say because there was an article that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch put out showing how money is spent in area schools. And you got black school districts that's predominantly black, that spend as much money or more than the ones that's predominantly white.
Yep. D.C. versus Utah in particular. I mean, I think Utah spends the least amount on their schools. Yeah, it's a predominantly white state, but they also get incredibly good results, you know, from a decent education, yet they spend less in Salt Lake City. You know, it's like half what they spend per student or less than that, what they'll spend in the D.C. schools, and yet the Utah students are smarter, and they get more education, and they're more exposed to more things. And the D.C. students, all the money in the world, you know, if you have bad teachers in a bad school system, you can have all the money in the world, you know, it's probably being stolen. You know, for whatever diversions, like when you get foreign aid, that gets diverted. But it doesn't matter. It's not money. Education was never dependent on money. Hey, let's make one more point, then I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for today, and then we got a few minutes left after that. We can chat.
Yeah, so what I was saying is you look at her school district that she represents. You look what she's made statements of cutting defense funding. Then you look at the schools that she read. Look at the student performing where less than 13% is proficient in reading. Less than 5% is proficient in math. The schools have brand new buildings, facilities, good facilities, computer labs, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, recently, a few months back, they took off a half day to school in order to celebrate the anniversary of George Floyd. So you see all these things in the making and the end result, and the end results of what you have. You have people like her, and I knew her father.
Oh,
people like her father, the excellent person. People like her and the politics that she's trying to portray is not the type of politics that you want to help push people, young people, mm-hmm. and put them into areas where they are underrepresented. And that would probably be most of the case with all the squad members. I'm telling you.
Yeah. It's interesting what Paul Lopez said about the squad being a Marxist, you know, Chairman Mao's little red book, you know, talking about squads are like cells or like independent units that are a specific team for a specific purpose. One of them is being anti-Semitic, which is interesting in of itself. All right, let me play this piece and then we'll be back for the remainder of our show today. I like doing 3 hours. This is kind of cool. I like having the extra hour. So I'm going to enjoy it. Starting Monday, just to let everybody know, 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 4 o'clock Pacific Time. Flyover Country, I don't know how many folks are listening there. I know there are some. But so it's 7, 6, 5, and 4 is when we'll be starting. Hawaii, you know, you're still asleep. So you guys get the podcast. Anyway, I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Papers, number 5. Once again, we return to the elitist national government promoting and future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay. It's hard to imagine any of his court opinions were of much use, given he returns to his favorite tactic of starting with a false hypothesis, using a false comparison for evidence, and making up his predetermined conclusion with absolutely no progression of evidence to prove his case. His basic premise is that since England and Scotland formed an entire and perfect union, which is something he got from a letter by Queen Anne back in 1706 when the states were mere colonies, that we could do exactly the same here with our states. He was, in fact, modeling our oppressor to use as evidence that we can have as good a union as England and Scotland. I guess John Jay had never heard of William Wallace and the various troubles between England and Scotland over the centuries. I wonder if, like General Milley, he knew his counterpart in England. The reason this is a false comparison is that England is a monarchy and therefore irrelevant to comparison to our states under the Articles of Confederation. Their people aren't even citizens, they are subjects. Scotland has been under the thumb and control of England also for centuries, as the King of England is also the King of Scotland, so again, this is hardly a voluntary or equal union, as are the states under the Articles of Confederation. From royalcentral.co.uk comes the current title of Queen Elizabeth II, which reads, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, with the style of Majesty. One has to wonder if John Jay was secretly a monarchist, and not just an elitist national government proponent. He never speaks of individual rights, and only of a strong national government with a strong national defense to defend against all enemies, real or imagined. Which brings us to the false evidence and made-up conclusion. He argues that the only way the states can defend themselves is to be under a strong national government, and that is why three or four confederacies that might form without a strong constitution would make America indefensible. And yet, the colonies, before the Articles of Confederation, threw off the oppression of the British monarchy John Jay is using in Federalist No. 5 for the model for our new nation. I'm sure this did not win him converts. He repeats himself again in this paper when he writes, "It was remarked in the preceding paper that weakness and divisions at home would invite dangers from abroad, and that nothing would tend more to secure us from them than union, strength, and good government within ourselves." He doesn't define or describe the three or four confederacies he tries to convince us the states will degenerate into if the Constitution is not passed. This is directly countered by the 13 individual states at the time of this paper, which were operating rather well as one confederacy. But John Jay is convinced that he can generate the fear with this bogus argument to scare people into running to a national government for safety. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Why else would he make all this stuff up? John Jay does define one of his confederacies by saying, "The North is generally the region of strength, and many local circumstances render it probable that the most northern of the proposed confederacies would, at a period not very distant, be unquestionably more formidable than any of the others." This is rather prophetic and ironic that the Confederacy of the Civil War, formed under the very Constitution John Jay was arguing would prevent such confederacies. Jay writes that each confederacy would be as distinct nations, with individual treaties with foreign nations. Of this, he said, "Hence, it might and probably would happen that the foreign nation with whom the Southern Confederacy might be at war would be the one with whom the Northern Confederacy would be the most desirous of preserving peace and friendship." He always writes of conflict that might happen, but he never acknowledges that his fears are never realized by the states while operating under the Articles of Confederation, or that the states had a mutual support and friendship pact through the Articles, such that if one state was attacked by a foreign power, the other states would immediately rush to the defense. The colonies had neither an army, a navy, nor a national government, but created a continental army and navy nonetheless, and won independence from England. This goes against the doom and gloom of Jay's imaginary scenarios of why something that is working won't work. So what exactly was John Jay talking about? Seems to me he has a predetermined conclusion in search of evidence and comparisons that don't exist. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right, we are back. Pianki's live. I'm live. We've got about 6 minutes left. You know, I think what you said before about, you know, the various races who are dating each other. And the nice thing about being in the Bay Area is that I had the opportunity to go out with Hispanic women and Black women and, you know, white women and Jewish women and Christian women and Buddhist women and Asian women. And, you know, and the biggest difference I found in the Bay Area is ideological. You know, there are those that hated me because they were liberal and I was conservative, you know, which is kind of rare in the Bay Area itself. But it was the ideological differences that were far more pronounced than the racial differences, you know. And you know, it's an interesting thing. And and groups that isolate themselves or races that isolate themselves, you know, I think it'd be too easy to develop prejudices, but you don't understand people. And people are pretty much people, you know, but it is interesting that that the strongest difference that I found, once you get around personalities, because they're nice people and, you know, total jerks. But once you get around that, you know, ideological are far more, you know, divisive. And this is why I think that racism is not really racism so much as it is ideological. Racism is used as the cover for it. Just a thought.
Well, the Amish, the Quakers, and the Mormons, they isolate themselves.
Yeah, they do. There should be more Black women.
No, well, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, if that's what you choose to do, I wouldn't say that, but I'm just saying that was my observation of folks that I've met and been friends with and you know, gone out with. It's just the starkest differences, the ones that really cause you the problems, are the ideological ones and the political ones, at least in the Bay Area, because it's such a political area. This is different. And, you know, people around in Florida, it's much more a patriotic American area, so there are differences here. But, yeah. But you live in leftist land. And you're either leftist
or
not.
Well, because in Florida, you got a lot of people that retired in Florida, and they wanted to get away from liberal cities up north, for instance.
Yeah.
So that's what you have. But no, the thing is that when I see school board meetings starting to fill up, then that makes, you know, that gives you some promise that there needs to be the ability to recall these school board members.
Oh, absolutely.
That should be a given.
Well,
and that's something that needs to be legislatively worked on.
I think people are reluctant to, and this is part of the resistance, I think, to Gavin Newsom, is the fact that people are reluctant to do that. It just either seems easier or more logical to wait for the next election. So the whole point is you want to have good people elected in the first place. But you don't certainly need recalls, and I wish Newsom had been recalled. They recalled Gray Davis, but California was a different time then. I voted for his recall over MTBE and other, you know, incompetencies of the Gray Davis administration, which had a lot more Republicans there. You had a lot more conservatives there. You had a totally different California. You have fewer illegal aliens and you have fewer tech people. So you didn't have the liberal, you know, bastion of, you know, wealthy tech people and, you know, illegal aliens. That's basically what the California is right now. Josie, you're on the line too. We only got about 2 minutes left. So let's get you in here for a comment. You're like 3 hours now.
I was like, what? He's still on? And it was 5 minutes after five, and I'm like, I didn't know you were going to have the 3 hour, but that's great.
Well, I decided last night. I'm pretty spontaneous here, but yeah.
Good.
Well, we're going to go 3 hours Monday. And we're 6 to 9 Monday. And so that's going to be – that's Central Time,
it's
the 7
Monday
to 10 Eastern Time. Yeah, we're going to start then. Well, it's actually my own fault because I upgraded the account to get more storage of all our original podcasts. And so in doing so, I thought I had to upgrade again to get the 3-hour time. Apparently, I've got 3 hours now.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start using it. And, so we'll be 6 o'clock Monday, and that's going to keep consistent. So anybody, if you want to change your time.
All right, listen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. No, I'm good.
Okay,
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Oh, God bless you, too. Yeah, we still have a minute left. Yeah, all right. I like 3 hours. It gives me more chance. I feel more relaxed. I can cover more subjects, and we can talk more. So I think that's going to be a good thing. Pianki?
Well, you got to get people that's going to be able to come in at different points in time in order to make the show roll.
Well, I mean, it'll be a little slower at first in the first hour because people aren't used to it, and we'll see who wants to change. I'm hoping that a couple of our Eastern time zone folks, you know, can come on earlier because they have work to do. So they're kind of stretching it, you know, calling and then dashing off to work. But it'll give them more chance to do that, especially since it'll be 7 o'clock their time. And the folks that are in the West Coast, you know, it's going to be, you know, they still have the regular 2 hours they had before, but it's an hour earlier. But a lot of people on the West Coast are actually up at 4:30 in the morning because they do business with the East Coast so much, you know, that it especially the stock market, which opens at 6 o'clock. You know, stock market in Wall Street opens up 6 o'clock Pacific time. So they've already been there for like an hour or two, and they're done. When the market closes at 4, that's 1 o'clock. So instead of going to lunch, they go home. Anyway, it's fascinating. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
Hey, we're out of time. Even with 3 hours, I think we could still keep going if we wanted to, but we can't. So let's do it again tomorrow. 7 to 10 tomorrow will be the time, and then 6 to 9 o'clock Monday Central Time. Thanks, Pianki. Thanks, Josie. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you.
Claire, Jonathan, everybody else who's on the show today. Our first caller, Jane, and we'll go from there. Greg Penglis for Action Radio. blogradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7.